The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and this doesn't happen as often as you might imagine. There comes a moment when something that we have talked about together quite a lot begins to crystallise as imminent or probable policy. In other words, the government reacts, as you would expect it to new threats and new dangers. We've been talking about social media and young people. All of us have. Everyone who's ever done a shift on LBC has talked about this umpteen times. But the story changes the closer it gets to the statute book. For example, I've gone from thinking something must be done immediately to thinking, please don't rush this. We have to get it right. And I bet we're not quite sure yet exactly what right looks like.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, ministers are considering tightening laws as part of measures to improve safety for children online. Plans could also see them being blocked from using virtual private networks to bypass age restrictions. A consultation on banning social media for under-16s is already underway. The Technology Secretary, Liz Kendall, has told LBC the government needs to keep up with online developments.
The technology is changing really, really quickly, but it took us something like almost 8 years to pass and implement the Online Safety Act. 8 years. I mean, you know how the technology is changing. So I think, just like we have a finance bill every year, we're going to have to start thinking about updating our legislation around technology much more regularly.
Police are under growing pressure to open a formal investigation into Andrew Mountbatten Windsor's ties with Jeffrey Epstein. Andrew is accused of passing sensitive information to the late sex offender when he was the UK's trade envoy. The former Liberal Democrat business secretary, Sir Vince Cable, has joined calls for criminal corruption claims to be looked into. The former Prince Andrew has always denied any wrongdoing. It's reported Sir Keir Starmer is considering making a significant increase in defence spending. Downing Street is said to be exploring the idea of meeting the existing target of 3% by the end of the current Parliament, rather than the next. The government says it doesn't comment on speculation. The final hearings of the UK COVID-19 public inquiry are due to get underway shortly. It'll examine how the pandemic impacted society, including key workers and the most vulnerable. And day 10 of the Winter Olympics is underway, with Team GB looking for more medals after yesterday's two golds. One was won by Matt Weston and Tabby Stoker in the mixed team skeleton event. She's told LBC News it was a surreal moment.
It was a dream come true. And especially to have all my friends and family there, everyone who's supported us along this journey, and to see them all in the crowd and see how much it meant to me, but also to all of them too. For me, it was amazing.
In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 31 at 10,477. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.14. LBC weather, scattered showers and sunny spells for most today. Some wintry showers on higher ground, a high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after ten. Far be it from me to criticise anybody possessed of sporting prowess. But it's not surreal to win a gold medal at the... If I won a gold medal at the Olympics, that would be surreal. I'm referring back to the news bulletin in case you missed it. The magnificent Tabby Stoker, who picked up a mixed team skeleton, describing her experience as surreal. And you've been training most of your adult life for this moment. You've entered the Olympics, not by accident. You've turned up, you've played, you've had an absolute, a bit of a nightmare in the individuals, but you've played played an absolute blinder in the mixed and you've won a gold medal. That's almost the opposite of surreal. That's completely real. It would be surreal if you turned up on the medal podium and instead of giving you a gold medal, they gave you a dairy milk or a banana. Well, that would be surreal. It's not surreal to turn up to work, to have a good day at work and to get rewarded for it. Surreal would be me turning up unexpectedly at the beginning of the skeleton, which I mean, that's the one where all you have to do is lie flat and still, right? Is that the one? Yeah. Anyway, it's like the mothership of all the sports I know I would be spectacularly bad at the Winter Olympics. Every single thing. Some of the sports look like they were dreamt up at 2 o'clock in the morning by undergraduates who'd been at the Wacky Backy all night. Well, no, and then you just like... got these big jumps, man, and then you go and then you just fly down this big tube of ice. It's and I get medals. And some of them are just insane, aren't they? Absolutely insane. But anyway, well done to the Brits who have, I think, probably taken everyone except themselves by surprise. Again, the opposite of surreal, by delivering on the medal front. I had a thought this morning. I don't know if it is a thought that you have ever had, but it is about the dangers of rushing things. The dangers of actually, when somebody starts shouting, something must be done, doing something, because people are shouting, something must be done. Am I making sense? It's an odd position to adopt when you are in the business of shouting something must be done on an almost daily basis. But I hope we're a little bit more sophisticated and nuanced than that during our time together. Something must be done. And the dangers of rushing things. So the Online Safety Act, which was years in gestation, doesn't contain any legislation for... chatbots, for AI chatbots, things like ChatGPT. It doesn't contain any legislation for it at all. And there are already cases unfolding, certainly in the United States, because we've spoken to one of the lawyers responsible for pursuing the case of people who are blaming ChatGPT for the loss of their children. Chatbots encouraging people to hurt themselves and young people in particular, but by no means exclusively, coming on the, technology to a point of addiction and dedication that they end up trusting it more than any real people in their lives. So that's not even in the Online Safety Act. So you've got this really weird tension between something must be done, don't rush things, and you can't legislate for everything because literally by the time you've finished writing down what it is you need to do, the technology will have advanced enough to present new challenges. So the legislation needs to be fluid at the very least, doesn't it? And yet, I also find myself thinking that we need to know a little bit more about why we're doing it. There's a problem with being a phone. Do you know what the problem with being a phone-in host is? One of the few problems with being a phone-in host is that you start thinking about the world in a slightly different way from how normal people do. You start thinking about the world in the context of topics. And will that be an interesting conversation? When you're a young and wet behind the ears phone-in host, or if you're a very lazy phone-in host, you just think, will that make the phones ring? And you've got no particular interest in whether or not anybody ringing in has got anything interesting to say. But if you move to tier two of phone-in hosts, will we get interesting calls? And that, oddly, is not the question that governments should be asking themselves. We're going to do social... Will we get interesting calls, do you think, Keir, on that? And, of course, you get the equivalent of the angry, ill-informed radio phone-in contributor, usually Kemi Badenoch in the current political landscape, who will just complain about everything. Well, they're not going fast enough. They've gone really fast. Well, they're going too fast. They've gone about the right speed. Well, they've got not going fast enough or slow enough. Like the sort of grand old Duke of York with their 10,000 men. When they were up, they were up. And when they were down. And when they were only halfway up, they were neither up nor down. You're just going to have to complain about whatever the government is doing because that's what you think the role is. Bless you, little cotton socks, as leader of the opposition. Now, the rest of us recognise something must be done, boom, but we simultaneously recognise that getting it right is more important than getting it now. Is that a catchphrase anywhere? Has that ever been a slogan? It's quite a good slogan. Getting it right is more important than getting it now. You can have that, politicians of the world. And if we're going to get it right, We need to focus on precisely what we think the problem is, or precisely what we think the problems are. And the social media ban for under-16s, which could happen this year, the Prime Minister is being urged to speed it up. Now, this is when an alarm bell goes off for me. Tell me why I'm wrong, that part of Keir Starmer's self-preservation programme would involve a speeded-up consultation that could conclude this summer. It will immediately introduce curbs, which could include an overall ban on under-16s using social media. We said that we would watch Australia very, very closely. And it's probably time to invite contributions from Australia on how this ban has worked down there. Let's be clear. In fact, in the interests of explaining that distinction between making the phones ring and having interesting contributions, it's not interesting to ring in and say, well, you can actually dodge it with VPNs. A, because, well, not if everybody knows, that might be a bit of an exaggeration, but it's not a, what would you call it? It's not a interesting contributor to the conversation, precisely because the VPNs are not going to undermine the whole policy. Do you see what I mean? A conversation about whether or not it is working is not undermined by finding loopholes. Loopholes do not destroy edifices. They merely provide small little passageways, small little loopholes through much bigger things. And so that is, it's time now to ask whether or not that is something that is working in Australia. Other countries are in the process of following suit, but Australia has had it on the ground for long enough for us to take a view on whether or not it's kicking in. But I'll tell you what I'm really interested in, and I hope this is the right way to set the question up for you. And I don't have any way of distinguishing between people who are sort of having an opinion on the subject and people who have lived through it. And I don't think that matters today. What's the big problem here? Is it odd that we haven't necessarily nailed that down? Because some people might answer that question by simply observing that it is all the filth that you can access. Elon Musk inviting every pervert on the planet, giving them the technology that they need to effectively undress children. That seems like a cause for regulation. But at the same time, the amount of hours that are spent on there, you know, no one would ever say that it was a bad thing, would they, to be addicted to reading books? Would you ever say that? Oh, we did, of course, take calls not long ago from people. Oh, in fact, one of whom I must get back to later today. We took calls from people who had been discouraged from reading as young people, but not in the context of addiction. Now, you get addicted to exercise, and that, odd though it sounds, that, of course, can be a very bad thing. Odd though it sounds to those of us who have the opposite problem when it comes to exercise. But no one would ever say, God, I wish you'd stop reading books. Would they? Things you can be technically addicted to because they provide you with a dopamine hit, but which are actually not obviously bad for you. Yeah, addicted to alcohol, obviously bad. Addicted to... it was when perhaps we first started hearing about sex addiction, and some people found that a bit sniggersome. You'd sort of be, well, if it's all consensual and everybody's happy with what's going on, how can that be a bad thing? I mean, you might get a little bit sore, but it's not like being a drug addict or an alcohol. And of course it is, because any addictive behaviour encourages you then to drop other parts of your life. So I suppose the point at which being addicted to reading would become a problem would be the point at which you're skipping work to read books, or you're neglecting your children to read books, or you're not looking after your personal hygiene to read books, or you're stealing from friends and family to buy books. So yeah, you could actually portray reading, being addicted to reading, as being a bad thing, as being a possible peril. But just because you're on social media a lot... I've been thinking about this recently, probably because I'm not on social media a lot anymore, and I have been periodically over the years. I've been on there too much many times, but not pretty much since Musk ruined Twitter, actually. And my Facebook, I've told you, for some reason, my Facebook algorithms are just so wholesome. Ping pong clips of table tennis. At the moment, I'm quite keen to buy an infrared sauna, so my Facebook's just full of saunas. Which is not something I don't think anybody would consider to be particularly hazardous or dangerous. So it's not necessarily something that you can measure in hours alone. You are on there too much. How much is too much? How much is too much? So I think that the big problem with social media, which is what they're looking at banning for under 16s, is not what they find, but how addictive it is. So ministers are looking at possible curfews, a possible total ban, or a possible restricting of addictive design features, such as infinite scrolling. Actually looking at the... I could be wrong about this. By all means, I don't want to necessarily set it up as a football match, but if you want to ring in and say it's not the addictive nature that's the problem, it's the actual content. So you know, going online once a week and finding something hideous is worse than being online 5 hours a day every day to the detriment of every other aspect of your life, but you're not actually looking at anything hideous. You could be addicted to wholesome stuff. I could get addicted to sauna adverts. I was semi-addicted for a while to parcels blowing up on people's doorsteps. Have you watched any of those? And you leave a doorstep parcel that looks like it's just been delivered by Amazon, and then someone comes along to nick it, but it's primed to blow up in their faces without any major injuries. It just covers them in coloured paint. It covers them in coloured powder. And then I clock that some of them were fake. And that once you know that one of them is fake, you lose the whole genre loses its appeal. They were AI generated. I don't know. Maybe that's an age thing. Yeah, the kids won't care whether it's AI generated or not. But as soon as I knew it wasn't real, it just ceased. It became pointless to watch. But it's pretty wholesome seeing people get punished effectively for their dishonesty. So the government is going to do something, and they don't know what. Chatbots, not currently catered for by the Online Safety Act. How are you going to do that? Limiting interaction with chatbots, blocking them from virtual private networks, which can be used to illicitly access pornography, so the VPN loophole could be shut down. It's not a question, said a government source, of whether we take further action, but what that action is. And I like that line. I like a couple of things that the government has done recently, whether or not it's because they've sent Morgan McSweeney packing or whether or not these things would have happened anyway, we will never know. But I like the fact that Keir Starmer is reminding people that Nigel Farage, for example, considers Vladimir Putin to be the most admirable politician on the planet. And that Russia poses a very real danger and threat to our freedoms and democracies, much greater threats, spoiler alert, than, for example, immigration. But I like this. I like the fact that they're saying we're definitely going to do something, but we're not entirely clear what yet. And we can tune out the noise of people complaining that they didn't do it yesterday, because if they'd done it yesterday, they'd get it wrong. You can have it right or you can have it now, but you can't have it right now. Someone just sent me a text, which is a sort of paraphrase of the thing I said a moment ago. So what do we have to do? I mean, if you had to, in a sentence even, if you had to pinpoint precisely what the top priority should be for the government when it comes to, in this case, younger people, although quite why we're not having more conversations about older people as well, given the threats and the dangers that these technologies pose. But then I've done it again. So what I want to try and do today is remove the glibness from the conversation. So I just did a glib. I was just glib then. The threats and dangers that these technologies pose. That's journalese for not really knowing what you're talking about. There's an accepted wisdom that this is bad and something must be done, right? But we don't actually dig deep, or you and I haven't dug deep into precisely what is bad and therefore what should be done. So there's the immediate and obvious first tension between those of us who thought that the problem was what you find when you go online. So some of the horrible cases that you can drag up from your memory without too much trouble would involve young people being exposed to horrible content involving eating disorders or self-harm or sexual abuse, all of the things where it is the content itself that concerns. But the more you read into it and the more you look at what is being considered, it's not the content itself that is the key concern. It's the addictive nature of the technology. And that's much harder to understand. That's much harder to frighten people with, not least because most parents have probably got a vaguely addictive relationship with social media or with technology. Most adults have got a vaguely addictive. I mean, at the very lowest level, it's just FOMO, isn't it? It's the fear of missing out. I better just check that, even though I'm supposed to be having my dinner, even though I'm at work, even though I'm supposed to be reading my baby a bedtime story. I'm just going to make sure nothing big's happened on social media. Just going to check my Facebook. Just going to, and that's FOMO. I said like borderline entry level addiction. So what would the government do about that? I like the fact there's a lot here. Whenever I find myself preparing to address a subject we've addressed together a few times in the past, I like it when I find myself having thoughts I haven't had before. And today I'm thinking, what actually is the big problem here? Is it the content, or is it the addictive nature, the very carefully curated addictive nature, the addictive design of the technology? And if it is the addictive design of the technology, as I am probably minded to argue this morning, how do you know? We've never done that. Done it with other addictions, done it with alcohol, I think we've done it with food. The point at which, you know, I love these conversations, sorry, I must get to the break, Keith's got that look on his face, but I love conversations about thresholds. You know, what is the difference between being very sad periodically and having clinical depression? And sometimes the most illuminating calls you've ever made to this program involve pinpointing precisely where the problem begins, where a normal problem becomes an ordinary problem becomes an extraordinary problem. So loads here. Just pick up the phone and pick off whichever of these you fancy. What on earth should the government do? 03456060973. What is the big problem here that legislation will seek to address? Is it addictive design? Is it hideous content? Is it some sort of combination of the above? Just give me your considered take on that question. What needs to be addressed? 03456060973. And if we go in on the addiction side of it, what's the difference between being on social media too much and having a problem? Particularly for, say, a 15-year-old child. What is the difference between being on social media too much, which is something very few of us could claim we are not guilty of, and having an actual problem, an addiction, or being a victim of dangerous addictive design? And if you haven't got anything there to get your teeth into, then, well, frankly, I despair. 03456060973 is the number you need. It's 10:21.
LBC.
This is the 810 to Birmingham New Street. Calling at Organise To-Do List. Call your PA. Shoot off a few emails. Close laptop. Head to the shop. Man behind the counter seems like a good egg. Thinking of eggs, one breakfast butty, please.
Business travel by train is time well spent with Avanti West Coast.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's come out, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and help support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
It's easy to forget just how crazy things have been over the past couple of years. Every day we wake up to something new. Tariffs and taxes on anything and everything. It's tempting to put your hands in your ears and go, la 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 la, I can't hear you, until it's all over. But you know what's the best response to crazy times? A plan for your money. And Quilter can help. Because let's face it, there's probably going to be some crazy times ahead too. Money needs a plan. Quilter. Pensions, investments, advice. Find out more at quilter.com.
Turn ordinary into the extraordinary every day with the Lexus LBX. Whilst most SUVs are big and brash, the LBX is quietly bold and confident. Refined luxury crafted into a compact SUV. The Lexus LBX. What car's best small SUV 2024 and 2025?
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
It is 23 minutes after 10, and as is often the case with these sort of conversations, I do want to just throw fixed odds betting terminals into the mix. Remember, and payday loan companies, and you might be wondering why, but money moves to where it can make the most money without any morality whatsoever. So payday loan companies ruined lives until legislation was made. And the lives needed to be ruined before the politicians woke up to the fact that legislation was needed to minimise the ruin that could be done. Fixed odds betting terminals are literally engineered. I researched this for one of my early books. I researched this and couldn't believe what I was reading. And yet the more you thought about it, the more obvious it became. To the nth degree, the relationship between input and output, the exact amount that you would need to win to make you think, oh, I'll just have another go. So they are literally fine-tuning the technology to take as much money out of your wages, out of your family's income, as they possibly can. And I'm not one of those who thinks this is all down to personal responsibility. If Epic's a bit like junk food as well, the enormous amounts of effort being put into encouraging us to hurt ourselves are not balanced out by personal responsibility when we're getting almost no help whatsoever to recognise dangers. So, as Keir Starmer is in the middle of a speech about the addictive nature of social media, I'm wondering whether we can get a slightly clearer picture of precisely what that is. State corporate harm maximisation. Thank you, Matt. Page 141 of How to Be Right in a World Gone Wrong. By James O'Brien. State corporate harm maximisation. That's kind of what's going on with social media now. But I want to get a clearer picture of precisely what the problem is, and then a clearer picture of precisely what the solution might be. Hit the numbers now, you will get through. Saul is in Wood Green. Saul, what would you like to say?
Oh, I just thought I'd chime in. So basically, addiction aside, we haven't given our 11-year-old son a smartphone because he started secondary school. And with the arguments and the tantrums, and some of his friends have and some of his friends haven't. And the reason is that it's such a delicate age, your development, as you move through primary, then into secondary. And you're having to deal with your immediate group in your class and all the different kids in school, and maybe you're starting to develop friends. And, you know, you're beginning to... I feel that you're beginning to understand your identity and things change and you start to go through puberty, obviously. Mm. And I think it's that identity thing which is so sort of distracting and overall could lead to a lot of undue stress at that age that kids maybe are not able to deal with as adults as better. You know, we find it difficult at the best of times.
Yes.
So having, you know, being judged by people outside of your immediate circle and much greater than that, and feeling like you're going to be judged, you know, could be judged, and then want to seek gratification whether you are judged, and then you start to get worried about whether you are or you aren't. And I think, you know, obviously I'm approaching it from an adult point of view, so maybe it's very different for a kid, but I think if you can just protect people a little bit from that unnecessary...
There's a seesaw. I've just drawn a picture of a seesaw in the studio, and I've got your boy on one end of it, where he hasn't got a phone. And then all of the problems he avoids as a consequence of not having a phone that you've just highlighted, but you've already explained a problem that you have put upon his little shoulders by not giving him a phone, which is distinguishing him from many of his peers and taking him out of communication networks that they will be part of. So it's not easy, is it?
Well, let's just focus on that point. So yeah. The other day, he says to me, oh, you know, Daddy, he says, I have to tell you, he says, I'm really happy I don't have a smartphone. I was like, what? He's like, some of these kids in school, he's like, they're just glued. He says, I can't even contact them. He says, I can't even talk to them on the bus. He says, I can't even talk to them about something I'm interested in. I can't even speak to them at lunch, Daddy. He says, they literally, these kids,
so
my age.
When does he get one?
I said he's not going to get one until he's 16. He's arguing, he's trying to bargain me until he's 15.
Well, that's fair enough. That's what teenagers have done throughout the ages. But I'm just trying to remember, mate, whether or not 5 years ago I'd have called you cruel. How can you deny him that? Because in many ways, what does it... Okay, try this, though, but try it honestly. What is he going to miss out on as a consequence of this? And I want positives only.
Well, you could say, what is he going to miss out on? But
you know, what do you miss out on?
No, answer, I'm going to go all Jeremy Paxman on you. Answer the question, because he is going to miss out on some stuff.
But it's almost like how long is a piece of string?
Well, no, it's not. Show me a piece of string and I'll show you how long is it. So, how long
what's
it is. We'll measure it together.
What is
he going to miss out on? So what about if his friends are all arranging to meet up together on WhatsApp?
He has a phone. He has a brick phone.
But WhatsApp is an app. You need a smartphone to use apps.
Yeah, I mean, remember, we're looking at it from an adult point of view. I mean, you know, when you say what's he going to miss out on?
I've got kids. I mean, they're
he doesn't miss out on anything.
Well, he might moving forward, because he won't be able to communicate.
Well, then you could say it's the fear of missing out.
No, it's a fear of not being at the gathering that they've all gone to. I mean, I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud, because it's tempting listening to Saul to think that the simplest thing you could do is just take the technology out of your chip. Why do we even need the government to step in on this? Answer, because not every parent is going to be minded or equipped to make the kind of decisions that we've just heard. But what is the problem, though? Someone on the bus looking at their phone is having a more interesting time than someone looking out the window at the rain. So, do you see what I mean? What is the actual problem that we want the government to fix? James is in Islington. James, I'll come to you first after the headlines with Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer says no social media platform will get a free pass as he promises to strengthen online safety protections for children. Plans could also see them being blocked from using virtual private networks to bypass age restrictions. It's reported Sir Keir Starmer is considering making a significant increase in defence spending. Downing Street is said to be exploring the idea of meeting the existing target of 3% by the end of the current parliament rather than the next. And the final hearings of the UK COVID-19 public inquiry are due to get underway this morning. It'll examine how the pandemic impacted society, including key workers and the most vulnerable. LBC weather, scattered showers and sunny spells for most. Some wintry showers on higher ground, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC. Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Big motoring world are big on value. But what does that mean for you? Well, we price check our cars every day, so we can give you the best price. Guaranteed. In fact, 95% of our cars are priced below market value. Big Motoring World, we're big on value. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
The Philly cheesesteak is back at McDonald's, and it's still intensely cheesy. Imagine the cheesiest thing ever. Now cover it in cheese. Add two beef patties, cheddar cheese sauce, crispy onions, and even more cheese. The Philly cheesesteak. Did we mention it's cheesy? Available until the 16th of March 2026 from 11 a.m. Fees apply to delivery orders. Price and participation may vary, subject to availability.
You know that feeling when your money is working for you? No? Well, make it. Open an investment account at XTB, make your first deposit and receive a free Rolls-Royce stock.
Rolls-Royce?
That's right. Own one of the best performing UK stocks this year for free. And if you like it, you can easily buy more stocks and ETFs with 0% commission. Join XTB and let your money work for you.
Your capital is at risk. Investments above €100,000 are charged at 0.2% commission. FX fees may apply. Limited availability. T's and C's apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
10:33 is the time. Oliver puts it better than I did, listening to Saul, the last caller. I disagree with your caller, James. I didn't have a phone until I was 15, and I missed out on so much socialising with friends. I had no real friends outside of school. So that's what I meant by the seesaw. There are some benefits from doing something, and there are some disbenefits or some negatives as well. I wish that we had a better understanding as a society of state corporate harm maximisation. Maybe it's too much of a mouthful, but it's best described as the systematic, often mutually beneficial interaction between political and economic elites that causes significant social, physical or environmental damage while generating profit and tax revenue. So it's state facilitated precisely because governments don't regulate to prevent harmful business activities, which is why I talk about fixed odds betting terminals and payday loan companies and junk food. So you might have turned on your radio this morning, James is talking about social media. Why on earth is he talking about those super-powered fruit machines in bookies, junk food, and payday loan companies? And the answer is they are exactly the same thing. This is when I wish I could sort of get into your brain and just type rather than having to try to explain it, because it doesn't sound very obvious. But state corporate, they're in it together. The government is complicit in it until it isn't. Keir Starmer has reached the point where he wants to make life much more difficult for the corporate side of this state corporate harm maximisation. But we need to know exactly what the harm is to come to a better understanding of what the solution would be. We will go to battle with AI chatbots, says Keir Starmer, falling into the mistake of anthropomorphism. Or not anthropomorphism, but making something that's not human sound human. And also, do you look at any politicians and think they're the ones that are really best equipped to solve these problems? Or do you, like me, think sometimes that they sound as if they've just been briefed on it before they gave the speech and don't understand even some of the words that they're using? James is in Islington. James, what made you pick up the phone?
Hello, I'd like to give my opinion about what the problem is. Good. About giving young children access to the internet.
The whole internet?
Yeah, literally the whole internet.
Okay.
The internet is essentially any computer can connect to any other computer. Any person can connect to any other person. Not specifically via social media or chat apps, but literally anyone can host a website or a service or anything on the internet, which means that anyone can talk to anyone on the internet. Now, when we're talking about young children, 14, 15-year-olds, I wouldn't necessarily let a stranger be in that kid's bedroom with the door closed.
No.
And that's what's happening when we give these children full, unvetted access to the internet. We're allowing them access to strangers in their bedroom with the door closed.
So you're not, I mean, you're going very much down the content rather than addiction argument, because, and also I think you've got the ghost train on your side, haven't you? You've got the selling tickets for the ghost train. It sounds already much more frightening than selling tickets with a speak your weight machine, which is talking about state corporate harm maximization and the addictive nature of the technology. That's not really frightening a mid to ill-informed parent, but what you've just said is terrifying. It doesn't mean you're right. It just means that you've got the best tunes.
That's a very interesting point. I'm a very good ghost train operator. But what I would say is that
talking about the freakish exceptions, which we are all frightened by. What the government is doing is not really legislating. I mean, hopefully any legislation would include those freakish horror shows that you're talking about. But what their top priority is dealing with the massive majority of people who are susceptible and vulnerable to unextraordinary events, which is addictive technology.
I disagree that I'm talking about the exception. I believe that we've been trying to create laws. No,
but you are. There are way more people who've developed an addiction to social media than there are people who've been groomed online without their parents' knowledge.
No, quite right. But I think the addiction to social media is less harmful than the general.
You're the perfect caller, because I don't know. I don't think I agree with you, and yet I can't really win this argument because you will just say terrifying things, and I'll sound like an idiot when I say, oh, I'm more worried about something else. How can you be more worried about a there's a paedophile over there in your daughter's computer screen? But I'm actually...
Okay, well, let me offer this.
Yeah, go on.
So in the early 90s, I think the conversation around the internet and harm to children was around pornography. Then it moved on to social media, and now it's moved on to chatbots. I think if you try and legislate against these specific services, you're not going to win the game of whack-a-mole. Because there's going to be something new that comes along.
Not if it's a ban on all social media, like they've done in Australia. Are you in the industry?
Yes, I'm a software developer.
Okay, so, I mean, in a way, you wouldn't want more legislation in your sector.
I do want protection against children being able to contact anyone else on the internet.
So in the absence of a ban on social media, how would that be affected?
Well, I think when we talk about social media, we talk about these very large tech companies like Facebook and X, and you can regulate those companies. They are somewhat accountable. You can bring them up to Congress, and you can sanction them, and you can legislate against them. But you can't do. Go on.
Technically, you can, but you remember who was sitting behind Donald Trump at his inauguration? It was all the people that most sensible folk would like to see better regulated, and they're expending enormous amounts of money on energy and on resisting regulation furiously and pretending that it's some sort of threat to free speech. I'm just trying to work out where we agree with each other. So we want more regulation, but you don't think a social media ban is the answer. You think that punishing the platforms more effectively for some of the stuff that they post. But then we all get addicted to wholesome content. So we're still spending 6 or 7 hours a day, but we're looking at sauna adverts and ping pong clips.
Yes, well, I think so, those kind of adverts we were necessarily getting before social media. I think back to...
It's a bad example. I mean something that is addictive, like me watching parcels blow up on people's doorsteps, or me watching ping pong clips, or people have parkour at the moment. I've told you before, James. Well, not you personally. I've told everybody. My algorithms are so wholesome. I don't fully understand why. It must just be I don't even click on me. If I see me scrolling past, I don't stop. I let that all go. But I will stop to watch ping pong, or I'll stop to watch parkour. Parkour's amazing. Oh, I sound like that poor White House character now, don't I? It's brilliant! So we're not there. See, there is the tension. What is the problem? The things that you find or the addiction that you develop? Rowena is in Boreham Wood. Rowena, what would you like to say?
Hello, you okay? Hello. So I'm 23, so I think my age is kind of... I don't have any kids, so I don't...
You've grown up with this. You're the first generation,
exactly.
Really, that's been
steeped in it. That's kind of my point, because I've had social media since I was 12 or 13, about... And I remember sort of fighting my mum to have it, you know, and she was kind of reluctant. But I think with generations that are slightly younger than me, like my friends' younger siblings that are sort of teenagers, mid or like maybe sort of 14 to 18 right now, me and my friends who are in our mid 20s, we've seen the gradual extreme sort of the scale swing quite extreme. And we've watched it happen slowly, so I think we can see it a little bit more clearly.
So you're the boiled boiled frogs, where the temperature has been slowly
we're the first
turned
generation
up.
That's had social media for our entire.
Before I dig further into your experiences, let me just hit you with some yes/no questions. Would you ban social media for under 16?
Yes, I think.
Do you know people who you could reasonably describe as negatively or detrimentally addicted to social media?
Yeah.
And do you know people whose lives have been ruined by it?
I don't know about ruined.
Okay.
But I'd hard to say what that means. Yeah, I would say so, yeah.
So what are the worst things that you draw on or recall?
I would say, I mean, there's obviously like the sort of online bullying thing that kind of happens in every school, which was kind of happening sort of when I was kind of getting older. But I think for me, like, the main point is it's ruining everyone's life, in the sense that it's subtracting the time that you spend in the real world. And that's the addictive quality of it. But then the more harmful content can actually distort your perception of reality and people in the real world. One of them is removing you from it and removing the time that you have to operate, you know, in your real sort of tangible material world and life. And the other one is actually actively distorting your perception of it.
Yeah, so it's not either or. It's
exactly.
Both. And the more addictive it is, the more the second factor becomes problematic. When would you say, at the tender age of 23, he says in a very patronising fashion, when did you wake up to this? When did you start realising this?
I mean, I sort of always knew it was kind of bad. I always had this sense. I mean, so I went to a Steiner school.
Yeah.
So they have quite a strong ethos about sort of not, or trying to sort of inhibit the amount of the effect of technology. Because it's a slightly sort of hippie school, I suppose, I guess you could say. So a lot of parents that, a lot of Steiner parents were very, very sort of strict on it and sort of didn't have TVs in the house. My parents weren't like that.
See, this is, I mean, that was going to be my next question. I had this producer 20 years ago, who used to be very impatient with people saying, oh, it's such a shame children aren't playing outdoors more. And it's a bit, I mean, I know that's a Steiner ethos, but also you reminded me of that when you started talking about the importance of connecting with the real world. I spent much of the weekend playing Ghost of Yote on my PlayStation, and that was much, much more fun than I would have had in the garden with a stick pretending to be a samurai soldier. So where do we derive our confidence that we are losing something by being on a screen that we would get if we weren't? What if we're just wrong about that?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it requires a level of sort of self-discipline. I mean, I don't think, you know, playing a video game, ultimately, it
can be addictive.
Different. It is addictive.
And it's ultimately pointless.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, I think...
But it's great fun, and I loved it.
You dedicate these times to yourself when you can allow your brain to kind of rot a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, and I have that. I watch Love Island after a day of, like, reading books.
That's it. So what we're tracking is, and this is why I said, what's the point at which it becomes a problem? It becomes addictive. So we're describing escapism, and what I think you've touched on is the thing where you're doing so much escaping that you're no longer actually inhabiting the world that escapism allows you to escape from. you're stuck in the parallel, like the upside down. Oh, thank you. And you're right. I think age is going to be very relevant to a lot of these answers. 10:45 is the time. It's not entirely pointless before I get bombarded by my fellow video game players. Obviously, it improves your eye-hand coordination. You have to use your brain quite a bit. And these days, if Russia did invade, I'd probably be more use operating a drone than somebody who can fly a plane. It's 10:46.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
We have to dispel this idea that migrants, all migrants coming to Britain, are seeking to establish control over the indigenous population. Let's not start from the point of absolute nonsense. It's obviously ludicrous and it's completely reprehensible.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
So, close your eyes, picture the scene. Just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island. Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wix to design our new kitchen.
At Wix, we have over 80 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000. And, right now, find big savings in the Wix kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms apply.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
You can actually see how nice London is, and London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
At TfL, we're opening up more of London for everyone with step-free access. We're continuing to improve accessibility at many of our stations, and now over 200 stations and counting have step-free access, including the entire Elizabeth Line, DLR and all tram stops. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Attention dogs, this is not a drill. If your dinner comes in dodgy brown balls or smells suspicious, at best, you deserve to know this. Butternut Box makes fresh dog food with ingredients you'd find in your human's fridge. In fact, some humans have even tasted it. For quality control, obviously. Anyway, let's hope your human was listening. Butternut Box, fresh food, happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped
for the journalism industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Molly, a journalism student in Year 12.
Outside of the classroom, we run our own news platform called The Loop. I do a daily news bulletin and produce videos for socials. We learn everything we need to be a journalist and have even learned alongside the news team at Global.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in Years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
10:49 is the time. Would you like to be party to the sort of conversations that Eleanor, the producer of this programme, and I have together off air? So often it's about whether or not we would... So it's a question that we're interested in answers to. But then we have a conversation about whether or not we could actually sustain interesting answers to that question for an hour or for 45 minutes. I really want to do a phone-in on what on earth is wrong with Liz Truss. But I don't know if, A, we could conduct that in a way that didn't become cruel or irresponsible, sort of casting aspersions on mental health. But what if that is the answer? Do you see what I mean? I'm already feeling the steam rising from the hot water that I could fall into. And B, would it be, but I don't know if you've seen the latest, the picture of her with Donald Trump and a hashtag right about everything, which is such a ridiculous take, even if you are not repulsed by Donald Trump and his obvious depravity. And of course, if that's not enough for you, the fact that he was best friends with the paedophile Jeffrey Epstein for years. The idea that he's right about everything is just such a ridiculous position to adopt, that the question of what on earth is wrong with this person, who not that long ago was essentially a centrist remainer, and not long before that was a liberal democrat, and now is slightly to the right of Genghis Khan. I mean, it is just extraordinary to me, that journey. But I don't know if it's interesting enough. I mean, I don't know. There you go. That's the kind of thing that passes for banter in the pre-production conversations, in the pre-show conversations here on LBC. Back to social media. And the problem we've got, and I've articulated it finally, but it wasn't my best introduction, was it? This idea that something must be done, but we don't know what. And politicians historically aren't really the people, especially not if they're acting on a panic or responding to the something must be done brigade, rarely will they get it right. So the first question is, what on earth is the problem? What precisely is the problem? David is in Nottingham. David, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Thanks for having me on. I did speak earlier in the year on your Internet Safety Day.
Oh, yes.
From the front line of social care, my staff are firsthand that see the impact of internet harms, but our approach is totally different. Technology, safeguarding, and we've got psychology. So if we really think about what we're trying to achieve, and I'm going to use Australia as an example, if you take away social media, what are you putting in place for young people or other individuals as an alternative?
Yeah.
So we can go surfing, we've got great weather, we've got positive dopamine responses to something we can do in the community. Here in the UK, we've got no youth service, and if we unpick everything, there's a lot of things which have happened which have created these problems. So we've got cost of living crisis, and this is not any judgment against any parents, sure, but the baby who's crying or the children who are really running you ragged, and you give them a phone or you give them a tablet and they sit there day
they're
in, day
quiet.
Out.
They're quiet.
They're quiet. However, they are being impacted by the internet. In
how?
The same case... Oh, go on.
How are they being impacted? I mean, I know they are. I'm not. That wasn't a gotcha question. It sounded like one of my... Go on then, give me one example. I know they're being impacted, but just I want to hear it in your words.
Being impacted by no human interaction.
Okay.
So they're not sitting around the table and saying, oh, you're lovely, you're amazing, what are we doing tomorrow? Let's do this, let's put the phones down. So the science has already told us about the impact that the internet has, yeah, on dopamine, serotonin, oxytocin and everything else. We're not actually using the measures and controls that we have in place to have a conversation. So what we do in our settings is that where we can monitor the internet, and we do this, and we see a significant change in mood, it's about a conversation. So the things that are really impacting some of our vulnerable are where eating disorders are present.
Yes.
And they're going on TikTok and they're following somebody who is, for example, there's a red band kind of trend at the moment which supports anorexia. And it's really negative content. But what we can do is have that conversation. We've got those young people that are on apps like Telegram, which we can see, actually, why are you on Telegram so much?
Right.
Or even just simple as Roblox. You know, why is my daughter or my son on Roblox from 3 a.m. in the morning? Is that really a time? Again, it's the conversation. So we've built
a platform. So would you ban anything? Would you ban anything?
I would ban, in the absence of this country providing better opportunities for young people, because the genie's out of the bag. We're 10 years down the line.
So you would ban, because it's too late to do some of the things. So an under 16 ban on social media, imperfect and you know, loophole vulnerable, but better than the status quo, better than where we are now.
But what you can do is ban certain social media applications in the absence of those tech companies making the changes that they need to. So as an example, Telegram. You know, really, should that be a platform that young people are accessing on the basis
I mean,
that...
That's quite dark anyway, isn't it? I mean, that's like the encrypted secret. I mean, I've got journalist colleagues who have a Telegram account because it's the one that can be used and nobody will know anything about the content. Do you know what I mean? That's going to be really hard 100%. To legislate for, because the appeal of it is the fact that it's the appeal of it is the fact that it's not regulated or it's not tracked in any way. So how can you control a platform that sells itself as being untrackable?
Well, you go to those individuals and you do what you need to do at the level that governments can do. You know, we can put spaceships on the moon.
I know. What I mean, why are you picking on that one? Just out of interest, mate, because it's not something that pops up in these. So in your work, is that doing, because that's people communicating with each other by definition, not wanting anybody else to know about their conversations.
Not even just the not wanting people to know. There's groups where they're selling drugs, where there's gang activity,
I mean.
Where there's illicit behaviour, where there's access to pornography. That is one of the known platforms.
Yes, no, I get that. So I just wanted to clarify that. So that is kind of established criminality. That's things that are already against the law that are being hidden from view by this particular technology, and as opposed to the broader experience, the general experience, which is things that are not illegal, but which are addictive. So they're just, I mean, again, it's like a hydra, isn't it? It's got so many different heads. But yes, I don't know enough about Telegram to know whether or not it's regulatable, but I do know enough about it to know that it's precisely because people aren't going to be able to pick up on it or to work out what you've done, that it is popular. You hide on there. Robert, like a few other people listening to David, and it's all very well for you to have a go at him. At least he had the guts to ring in. It can be a bit nerve-wracking sometimes. He wants to know when we started keeping genies in bags. Yes, I did that. I noticed that as well. David, stay safe. Mohammed is in Ealing. Mohammed, what made you pick up the phone?
Morning, James. How are you?
Very well, mate. Very well. What's going on?
Just a side note, actually. I called in a few months ago and I was in the middle of a lesson. Do you remember the call?
Yes, I do, actually. Yes. It's not to be encouraged, that kind of thing, but it was it was very pleasant at the time.
Yeah. So I'm going to look at it from the lens of just being in the school and how it affects students. I think the main thing is the attention span, but on the weekend, on the Monday morning, you have the support team and the pastoral team. They'll be dealing with issues that have spilled over from the weekend due to social media, due to things like issues that have happened between students and between the students during the weekend. It affects not only how they are in the lesson with how they focus,
yeah, of course, but beyond that as well.
But beyond that as well.
And so, I mean, say there's 40, 50 kids in a class. How many of them are going to be up to their ears in this stuff?
I think that it varies. The best way to gauge it is with attainment. So there are students who are more distracted than others. In a private school, for example, students are less distracted. Is that something from the parents? I don't know what what is done differently.
They're much smaller classes, most obviously. It's a lot easier to, it's a lot harder to hide in private schools. So my memories are 40 years old now, but if I had been in a class of 40 or 50 people, I don't think I'd ever have done anything. I'm so easily distracted, but in a class of eight, I couldn't hide.
I think, it's definitely like more socioeconomic factors because they're all the same age, but it's just, it comes from the parents.
And there'll be some neurodiversity as well. I mean, I find it very hard to concentrate in many circumstances in ways that other people don't. And so that susceptibility to distraction is going to be quite hard to properly legislate for because you'll end up taking things away from people who are fine in order to protect people who are not. So what would you do? I mean, in the school, you can take the phones away or ban phones in school, but you're not banning social media. Would you back the 16s, what they've done in Australia? Under 16s can't get on social media anymore. And it can be done because it happened with pornography last year, didn't it? When suddenly it became impossible to access a lot of the porn sites without proving that you were of a certain age.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to, a blanket ban, you know, children would, as students would find their way around it.
But a lot wouldn't. Again, the pornography example works. Loads of people have just stopped accessing those sites. I think one of them is closing down as a consequence, I mean, for good or for ill.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be against a complete blanket ban. But I think sometimes I think even the parents would need a retraining on how much is affecting their kids.
Yeah, and I mean the other problem with the blanket ban is the people who really rely upon it for a whole heap of reasons, not least actually, not least neurodiversity. A lot of autistic young people will have entire networks of support and communication that are much harder to access IRL or in real life. I took a very poignant message from a mother whose boy is being bullied mercilessly at school, but who is autistic and has a fascination with laundry appliances, which is an enthusiasm he can only really share when he's online. I saw it a bit, I told you, a couple of weeks ago when I went train spotting for the first and probably last time in my life, and the infectious enthusiasm of some of the young people that were there, and many of whom were autistic, ear defenders and the sunflower badges and various other indicators of that. There was a joy there. I don't know how they would ever have met each other except online.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, ministers are considering tightening laws as part of measures to improve safety for children online. Plans could also see them being blocked from using virtual private networks, or VPNs, to bypass age restrictions. A consultation on banning social media for under-16s is already underway. Speaking in the past hour, Keir Starmer said the government is working to keep up with online developments.
We're taking the powers to make sure we can act within months, not years. We also need to act very quickly, not just on the age concern, but on the devices and applications that mean the sort of auto-scrolling, or that one thing follows from another. We have to break that habit to stop the addictive nature.
This reporter, Keir Starmer, is considering making a significant increase in defence spending. Downing Street is said to be exploring the idea of meeting the existing target of 3% by the end of the current Parliament, rather than the next. The government says it doesn't comment on speculation. Sir Vince Cable has joined calls for a police investigation to be opened into Andrew Mountbatten Windsor's ties with Jeffrey Epstein. The former Liberal Democrat business secretary says claims of criminal corruption should be looked into. Andrew is accused of passing on sensitive information to Epstein when he was a UK trade envoy. Andrew has always denied any wrongdoing. The Energy Secretary Ed Miliband and the Californian Governor Gavin Newsom have signed an agreement to deepen cooperation on clean energy. It aims to boost transatlantic investment as well as strengthening collaborations between researchers and sharing of expertise. And day 10 of the Winter Olympics is underway, with Team GB targeting more medals after yesterday's two golds. One was won by Tavi Stoker and Matt Weston in the mixed skeleton event, while Weston also took the title in the men's skeleton event on Friday. He's told LBC News he was pleased that he could finally celebrate.
It was
pretty crazy, to be honest. I think for me personally, I've been holding out since the individual event. I've been being very sensible, keeping myself in top shape to go and compete on the team race yesterday. So I was definitely looking forward to celebrating last night.
In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 19 at 10,466. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.14. LBC weather, scattered showers and sunny spells for most. Some wintry showers on higher ground, a high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Because you bought your robot vacuum on your Barclay card, you got 0% interest for up to 24 months, which makes watching it, hypnotically sweeping up your crumbs, even more satisfying. Oh, missed a bit. What you buy is your business. Helping you pay less interest is ours. Barclay card. Make money work for you. Subject to financial status, new customers only. Representative example, 24.9% APR representative variable, 24.9% purchase rate per annum based on £1,200 credit limit. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Minutes after 11 is the time. So the conversation I want to have next is about the threat, the military threat posed to this country by Russia. And I bet if I said to you, my first thought is something that fits in with the conversation that we had in the last hour, you'd probably think I'd done a Liz Truss and gone a bit bonkers. What possible link could there be? Front page of the Financial Times today. Kremlin enlists former Wagner Group agents for Europe sabotage campaign. Now, some of the sabotage will be physical, but much of it will be propaganda, a campaign of disruption, essentially trying to undermine Western support for Ukraine and sowing social unrest. Russian-sponsored behaviour online, which can only really be policed by the platforms on which the propaganda appears. Many of which are currently dedicated to pretending that your free speech is under threat because they don't want to take financial, moral and indeed legal responsibility for stopping Russian propagandists from polluting our public discourse. I don't know if we will ever find out how many roads lead back to Moscow or St. Petersburg, but the online demonization of London is so ridiculous and yet so complete that you can't for a moment imagine that it hasn't been in some way masterminded or motivated by enemies of our state, enemies of this country, enemies of the British people. Why on earth else would you want to persuade people in Pitlochry or Bristol that London is some sort of hellhole? By posting lie upon lie upon lie on social media. There's a rather brilliant YouTuber called Evan Erdinger. I don't know if you've ever come across him. I bumped into him in the park once during lockdown. Lovely lad. And he's done a great film on just how mad these lies are. And that's it. So I say to you, Russian propaganda campaigns seeking to sow disruption across Europe. And you're not thinking, oh, it's that AI woman complaining about Sadiq Khan building loads of houses for Muslims, which isn't true, by the way. I'll make it absolutely clear. But if your social media is full of that, you're actually the kind of person we should have been talking about in the last hour, except you're a grown-up, so no one is thinking of protecting you from the dangers of those sort of lies. So you talk about the threat of Russia. Why on earth would concerns about Russia come second in the priority list of UK voters? Second only to immigration, which says it all, because ask them whether or not it is something that affects their lives, and most people will say no, but ask them whether or not it's something that affects the country negatively, and most people will say yes, or many people will say yes, which kind of sums up the state of our country in many ways, and the role that the media has played in getting you to look over there, when really you should be looking over here. But why? So it comes second, the perceived threats to Europe. Russian aggression comes second behind immigration, but not in a way that makes people worried about armed conflict. So this is absolutely fascinating, because what we're learning today by knitting these two stories together, there's some YouGov polling, the European Political Monthly Survey, looking at what the concerns are of people, and a story about the Kremlin escalating its European sabotage campaign, and they are intrinsically linked. Can you see why? Because the idea that European people or British people think that immigration is the greatest threat to Europe is a direct consequence of the Russian propaganda campaigns trying to disrupt Europe. It's why Brexit was brilliant for Vladimir Putin. It's why politicians who speak of their admiration for Vladimir Putin, or who indeed take money from Kremlin stooges to pollute public discourse in this country, are traitors, are so, so dangerous. And yet there it is. There's the proof that it's working, but also that we kind of know about it. The proof that it's working in plain sight. What's the greatest threat to Europe? Immigrants. What's the second greatest threat? Russians lying to us, or Russian divisive propaganda. But what if the immigrants are the subject of the Russian propaganda? Do you see what I mean? It could boil your brain there. So we are worried about Russian aggression. That comes in second. But we're not worried about armed conflict. We're worried about Russian aggression, but we're not worried about armed conflict. And, of course, military honchos, senior military figures and political figures, have been queuing up for a while now to tell us that we absolutely should be worried about military conflict. The UK and Germany today in the news. And, of course, this is what the security conference in Munich that Keir Starmer has been attending was largely about, the need to be better prepared for military conflict. Britain and Germany's highest-ranking military chiefs have made an unprecedented... Think about all the conversations we've had over the years together, and I've been doing this for 20 years now, give or take. All the conversations we've had about matters military and where Germany sits in those conversations. So for British people or for British residents to be having a conversation about military matters, about threats, and where does Germany sit in those conversations? If you're anything like my age, where would Germany sit? Germany would still be the bogeyman in conversations about British military power, even though the Nazis are, enjoying a bit of a comeback, I suppose, at the moment on the world stage, but they are, as the actual Nazi party, Adolf Hitler's political movement, they are an increasingly distant memory. But to have a conversation on LBC 20 years ago about the war or the safety of Europe, the whole reason for Brexit was linked to the continuing demonization of Germany. You know, they called it, didn't they, the Fourth Reich. And they warned against, I still don't understand this, a European army would be a bad thing, according to various Kremlin mouthpieces and Nigel Farage. Is that a Venn diagram or a circle? I don't know. But anyway, the big Vladimir Putin fanboy, Farage, was warning against the European army. In fact, he said, we need to leave the European Union, otherwise there'll be a European army. And nobody stopped to say, hang on a minute, mate. It's the armies we're not in that we should be worried about, not the armies that we are in. And you fast forward a few years, 10 years, in fact, from Brexit, and you find yourself contemplating a story that would have been unthinkable 20 years ago. Britain and Germany's highest-ranking military chiefs have made an unprecedented joint appeal to the public to accept the moral case for rearmament, wait for it, and prepare for the threat of war with Russia. And they describe themselves, Air Chief Marshal Sir Richard Knighton and General Carsten Brewer, the German Chief of Defence, describe themselves not as, and I'm quoting now, voices, not as just military leaders of two of Europe's largest military spenders, but, quotes, as voices for a Europe that must now confront uncomfortable truths about its security. So the military chiefs of Britain and Germany are warning that we need to rearm as a consequence of the Russian military threat. What's the first thought that pops into your head? What's the first thought that pops when you hear that? Is it one of those stories that's actually too big for us to get our heads around? Give us a ring about parking tickets or smart motorways. The British and German military chiefs have joined forces. What's the first thought that pops into your head? Even on that simple statement, they're on the same side, discussing the safety of Europe and the threat posed by Russian military aggression. uncomfortable truths about our security. They both said that Russia's military stance had shifted decisively westward and that a step change, their word, not mine, was needed in Europe's defence and security. Published today in the German newspaper Die Welt and in the British newspaper The Guardian, not historically the most sabre-rattling of UK media outlets, but in the wake of the Munich Security Conference, both soldiers have said that they have a duty, and I quote, to explain what is at stake so that the public could understand why Britain and Germany have committed to the biggest sustained increases in or spending cuts to fund greater spending on the armed forces, including those who say it is very important to increase UK hard power. This is absolutely insane. And yet, just true. The British and German military chiefs warning that we need to rearm and prepare for the threat of war with Russia. The bloke currently leading the opinion polls in this country is Vladimir Putin's biggest fanboy in Britain, Nigel Farage. Extraordinary. Donald Trump has not done anything in either of his two terms as President of the United States of America that would be likely to upset Vladimir Putin. Make of that what you will. Whether it's compromat, whether it's greed, self-interest, doesn't matter. They have shared interests in Europe and they are negative and destructive. The White House and the Kremlin both want to destroy European democracy, European unity and European security. NATO, something upon which the British people are almost unanimous in their support for, constantly coming under attack from various traitors and quislings who claim that Ukraine brought war upon itself or something by looking to the West, when why on earth would they want to look to the East, where they see totalitarianism, kleptocracy and a murderous regime that yesterday was adjudged to have killed Alexei Navalny using poison, something that the British authorities are looking into. So the problem they describe, Air Chief Marshal Sir Richard Knighton and General Carsten Brewer, the Chief of Defence in Germany, the problem they describe is one of appreciation. It's too weak a word. It's like we don't feel it enough. We don't feel the threat. I don't want to say the fear. We don't feel the threat enough. So ask what is the biggest threat to Europe, and people will say, in second place, Russian aggression. But they won't put armed conflict anywhere near Russian aggression on the list. It's as if we know that the propaganda and the disrupting of discourse and the interfering in elections, it's as if we know all of that. Russian aggression is here. It's in our brains. Second biggest threat to Europe. In fact, it's the biggest threat to Europe, because if you removed the Russian propaganda from the debates about immigration online, immigration wouldn't be the thing that people are most worried about. Literally have a grasp of aggression beyond Ukraine, but no fear of armed conflict. And it is precisely this disconnect that these two men are most concerned about. Air Chief Marshal Sir Richard Knighton, Chief of the Defence Staff in Germany, Carsten Brewer. How can the European public be conscious of the threat posed by Russian aggression, but supremely untroubled by the prospect of Russian aggression in the guise of armed conflict? So this is one of the weirdest questions that I've ever asked you. And it may not work. We may end up doing the What's Wrong with Liz Truss phone-in, because I really want to hear your answers to this question, and it's not an obvious one or one that I've asked you before. How do you do that? How do you do it? How do you persuade the British public in the first instance, because those are the people we know best, but how do you persuade the European public that Russia, that Vladimir Putin poses a military threat to us and our lives? Because even then, I can start talking myself out of it as soon as I say those words out loud. Oh, there's a big difference between polluting the internet. There's a big difference between invading Kyiv and invading Leicester. And there is, right? But how do you do it? Because who are you going to trust on this, if not these dudes? How on earth do you actually, short of visible evidence of that threat, which would be Estonia or Poland or whatever comes next on Putin's shopping list of illegal invasion. How do you persuade someone in Basingstoke or Birmingham that they should be worried about the Russian military threat, that they should be conscious of the threat of war with Russia? How do you do it? I have no idea. That's why I'm not sure this is a phone-in. But we'll find out. How do you do it? How should these men be addressing this huge problem of a European public that just doesn't think there is a threat, a military threat? There's a threat of aggression. So, yeah, we're worried about Russian aggression, but we're not worried about war. How do you persuade people that they should be? 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. How on earth do you do it? And perhaps one way to start would be online, where people have been persuaded that the real threat to their way of life comes from AI-generated footage of crimes being committed in streets that don't exist. And a lot of that will go back to Russia, but not all of it, because there's plenty of people making money from it and plenty of British politicians buying into it. But how do you do it? I've got a second question for you as well, which I don't think we've ever actually done on the programme. But the first one I want you to answer is this. How do you do it? How do you persuade the European public that the threat of war is real? Hit the numbers now. You will get through. It is 11:19. I'll tell you the other question after this.
The LBC app. News your way. This is LBC.
Radio turns miles into memories. From sing-alongs with the family, road tripping with your friends, or continuing that conversation right into work. In-car entertainment is getting better and better, allowing you to create more memories than ever before. So make sure your next car suits all your radio needs.
Okay, done. Move that. And, oh, new ways to invest.
Okay.
Foolproof guaranteed returns. Invest today.
All right, I think I will.
Way before you seal the deal, check if it's real and if a company's authorised by the FCA.
Oh, thanks.
Search FCA Firm Checker.
When the days are cold and dark, we Swedes don't let the weather dampen our spirits. We make it as comfortable as possible. We light candles, settle into the sofa with a fika, sheltered from the world outside. We can't offer you a cozy Swedish log cabin, but we can give you the next best thing. Visit the Volvo new car event between 18th of February and the 11th of March for event offers on selected new cars across the Volvo range. Thoughtfully designed and shaped by the Swedish way of life, giving you that inviting feeling all year round. Order online at volvocars.com or book an appointment at your local Volvo retailer.
Offers vary by model and apply to model year 26. Retail customers only, subject to availability, terms apply.
And when teams feel supported, they can achieve anything.
Sorry. Just had even more of my team are off ill.
Have you tried Benenden Health? It's easy to set up. They've got a GP helpline you can book 24/7.
Where were we?
A coffee break, hopefully.
Press play on your people's health with a wide range of healthcare services for less than £16 per employee per month. Search Benenden for Business. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
11:21 is the time. Have a little listen to Keir Starmer speaking at the Munich Security Conference on Saturday. Bear in mind as you listen to it the warnings issued by the German and UK military chiefs. We must rearm. And the subtext that the British public, the European public, is not sufficiently concerned about the threat of war with Russia. And then we'll begin to answer the question of how on earth you make them sufficiently concerned. But here's Starmer on Saturday.
Now, we are not the Britain of the Brexit years anymore. Because we know... and that is because we know that in a dangerous world, we would not take control by turning inward, we would surrender it. And I won't let that happen. That's why I devote time as Prime Minister to Britain's leadership on the world stage. And that's why I'm here today. because I am clear. There is no British security without Europe, and no European security without Britain.
And, you know, what a grim picture that paints of what we've allowed to happen to our country in the context of European security, our insularity prompting us to withdraw from the continent at a time when the threat from the East is greater than it has been at any point since 1945, or at least since the end of the Cold War. So how do you do this? How do you fix this? I have no idea. I really don't. And sometimes when I say that, I'm kind of poking you in order to get you to ring in, but I'm not doing that today because I have no clue. Persuade the British people we should spend more money on weapons, on arms. You can't do that unless they feel threatened, unless they feel fear. And they don't. So how do you fix that? 0345 6060 973. Al's in Glasgow. Al, what's going on?
Yeah, hi. I think one of the things is that people need to be persuaded, you know, pragmatically what the situation is. I mean, firstly, I don't know how aware people are that there is a major armed conflict and it's just a few hours flight away. Secondly, from
do you mean Ukraine?
Yeah.
Yes, I think most people are aware of that, but they're probably not aware of how near it is, both sort of geographically and metaphorically. And that's contingent also upon the fact that Putin doesn't stop there, in that his imperial, this is what people are ignorant of. The twin pincer. Number one, he sustains his kleptocracy by imperial expansion, by having a sort of ethos of perpetual war. But number two, he actually wants to. There's an ideology behind the greed. They go hand in hand. He wants a return to borders that, in some cases, haven't been seen since the 17th or 18th century.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a little bit sort of academic, I think, maybe in this presentation. It should be maybe presented in its raw form, you know, what invasion and conflict actually means. And I remember seeing someone was interviewed at one of these, you know, the tents in Kyiv where they go for, you know, to charge the batteries, get a bit of warmth, that sort of thing. And she said, we would rather be suffering in the cold than be under the Russian flag.
Yes.
And I think that needs to be conveyed.
How, though? Because what you're describing what I'm describing, is a sense that it couldn't happen here. And that's going to be very, very hard to address, isn't it?
Well, it has almost happened here before, in that, you know, people had to feel the fear because in World War II, at the beginning of, they were told that the Germans are only 20 miles away.
But if Putin had invaded Poland or France, then the job of persuading the British public to care more would be much easier, wouldn't it? Today.
Yeah. Yes. But I think it's a communications issue. I mean, okay, they've got rid of a communications guy at the top, but somebody needs to get the visceral message across, I think, to convey.
Yeah, but I don't think you're answering. I mean, this isn't a criticism because I said I don't think anyone can answer this question. I mean, that is, you're just asking my question back to me. How do you get the visceral message across is what I'm asking, and your answer is we need to get the visceral message across. That's not an answer. Yeah. The problem. I wouldn't know where to start. The Chief of Defence doesn't know where to start. The German, his German counterpart doesn't know where to start. You know, what do you do? Here is somebody sitting in Basingstoke, Birmingham, Bolton or Doncaster, and they are not currently giving two hoots about the prospect of war with Russia. How do you persuade them that they should?
Well, I think people can also think that we're an island, you know, and feel comfortable in the fact that, well, we're an island, nobody's going to invade us. But you can disable us. And, for example, you can do it in fairly non-kinetic ways. So, for example, you know, millions of businesses use software, subscription-based software. What if their accounts were switched off?
I'm just thinking about Bob in Bolton. I'm not picking on Bolton particularly. Could be Birmingham, could be Basingstoke, could be Basildon, could be anywhere. This isn't working. You're just saying back to me that this is really hard to do. No, nobody knows. I'm right. There's no phone in here. No one's got a clue what you do to actually persuade the people of Britain, particularly because we're an island, that they should be very worried about Russian aggression. Frighten me. Go on, frighten me.
Well, what have you... put it this way. I woke up one day, sat at my PC, found that we'd been cut off.
I'm not frightened.
Computer's been cut off.
I'm not frightened.
No?
No.
Okay. It's. I think that's partly a communications thing. They would be.
How?
They would be scared.
How? Tell them how. How?
Need to see better examples.
How complacent were we in 19? Well, we were, weren't we? It was Chamberlain and stuff like that. But our military capability was still pretty huge. But you wouldn't have persuaded the. I mean, the average Brit wanted Chamberlain to be right. They didn't want another world war. So you would have. So how? I mean, short of watching Putin escalate, how on earth are you going to persuade people to prepare for escalation?
We have the media to be able to communicate.
Right.
At that time, you only had newspaper articles.
But the media today is going in the opposite direction. It obsesses about small boats and Muslims.
Well, that's where the government needs to basically...
Well, then you're back to how. So, respectfully, and because you're proving my point, I'm not having a go at you. I haven't got any answers to these questions either. But you can't say communications, the government, the media. Obviously, those are the means by which you persuade people to be more concerned about this. But how? How? It's a bit like some of the great heroes of the modern left talk about grassroots movements. I don't want to name names, it wouldn't be fair, but you say, look, here's quite a big problem, how are we going to solve it? And they say, well, we need a grassroots movement from the public. And you go, yeah, but what? I mean, what tune are they going to dance to, these grassroots movements of yours? How are you going to persuade the British public that they should be concerned about the threat of war with Russia? Not my words. The British and German defence chiefs. You can't say, I'm not having a go at Al, I'm having a go at myself for setting up such an impossible phone-in. You can't say, oh, well, the government must do more. What must the government do? You can't say, well, the media just... What must the media do? You can't say, oh, well, I blame social media. What would you do to remove... I mean, first of all, it's the answer to all the questions I've asked on this programme for the best part of 10 years. It's stop letting racist provocateurs dominate public discourse and political discourse in this country. How do you even do that? I don't know. All I can do is present the most popular show on the radio and wonder why more people don't realise that this is a commercially successful position to adopt instead of selling snake oil and race hate. How do you make people more worried about Russia than they currently are? Answers on a postcard, please, after the headlines with Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer says no social media platform will get a free pass as he promises to strengthen online safety protections for children. Plans could also see them being blocked from using virtual private networks or VPNs to try and bypass age restrictions. The Prime Minister says there will be an investigation into allegations that a think tank paid for research into journalists who reported on its funding. Labour Together has been accused of commissioning a report in 2023 that investigated the personal backgrounds of several reporters. And the Kremlin has rejected accusations that it was responsible for the death of the jailed Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny. The UK and four other European nations say they have evidence that Russia killed Mr. Navalny using a toxin from poisoned dart frogs in 2024. LBC weather, scattered showers and sunny spells for most, wintry showers on higher ground, a high of 10 degrees.
This is LBC.
Nothing beats that electric feeling of live sport. As the proud automotive partner of Team GB, Vauxhall is supporting Britain's extraordinary athletes. Through every nail-biting, glued-to-the-box moment, Vauxhall is working towards a better future for our nation with its electric vehicle range, including the compact Vauxhall Combo Electric Van, made in Britain for Britain. Head to lbc.co.uk and tell us about your own extraordinary work fees to win £1,000.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
The people are friendly on the telephone. You can always get a problem solved.
You stepped it up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
The customer service is really good.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Your customer service was tip-top, you know, I couldn't fault it.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which 9 years running.
People ask me, what's my good place? Wild swimming with the girls on a chilly spring morning. And knowing that with Pension B, I can choose to invest in line with my values, which is why I picked their climate plan.
Last one in by blood!
At Pension B, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionb.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
A Southern Train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Psst. Hey, dogs. Yeah, I'm talking to you. If you're tired of dry, tasteless kibble or slop that plops out of a tin, you're going to want to hear this. Butternut Box makes only the freshest dog food with juicy meat and tender veg. It's the kind of food that makes dogs tongue out running around the kitchen happy. Let's hope your human heard this too. Butternut Box. Fresh food. Happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? A record 9 years running.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
11:34 is the time. It's not new, actually. I've said it before, I'll say it again. I really do have the best listeners. Ed's been in touch with a reminder of George Orwell's conclusion to his homage to Catalonia, which takes us back to 1938. Here it is. And then England. Southern England. Probably the sleekest landscape in the world. It is difficult when you pass that way, especially when you are peacefully recovering from seasickness with the plush cushions of a boat train carriage underneath you, to believe that anything is really happening anywhere. Earthquakes in Japan, famines in China, revolutions in Mexico. Don't worry. The milk will be on the doorstep tomorrow morning. The New Statesman will come out on Friday. His reference points are a little bit redundant, both in context of milk deliveries and the popularity of the New Statesman. But the point stands, right? We don't care enough. And this was just before the outbreak of the Second World War. So how on earth do you make people care about the threat of war with Russia? Helen is in Manchester. Helen, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. How are you?
Hello. Very well, Helen. What's on your mind?
I did say to your producer, I think this will sound a little bit childlike and maybe even a little bit sarcastic.
Go on.
But I think we need a big, sexy BBC or ITV drama.
See,
prime
like,
time.
It doesn't sound childish. We need James Graham to write a drama about it.
If you look at America during the Cold War, there was a made-for-TV movie called The Day After. And it really focused on not so much the military side of the war. It focused on the effects of what would happen if a nuclear weapon got dropped in America to the actual people. How would it affect people's lives? What would happen to the towns and communities?
So it's a counterfactual. It's a drama based upon Russian military aggression reaching far into Europe.
They don't actually even say that it's Russia.
Right.
It's very much the focus is on the effects rather than, you know, trying to blame somebody for dropping a weapon or what led up to it. There's a very similar British film that I think was made by the BBC called Threads.
Threads, yes, exactly that.
And that is basically set just outside Sheffield. But both of these films had the same impact. They had people watching them who weren't necessarily the kind of people who would be watching the news.
No, I hear you.
And especially in this day and age, it's very easy if you're a regular listener to LBC like me to think that everybody is as well informed and everybody is as interested in the news and politics. But actually, when I talk to my friends who are my age, and I'm 43, there's a lot of people who just don't watch the news anymore.
I know there are. Both of those films, did they inculcate fear of an enemy or fear of the bomb?
I think definitely it was fear of the bomb.
Yeah,
it was fear of the
too.
Consequences. Because in neither film, they're not particularly explicit about who the enemy is or what has led to the
bomb. So we would need to be slightly different. This would have to be a little bit more specific to the Russian threat. But the Kyiv and Ukraine would provide the backdrop for that. Already murdering people on British soil. One thinks of Dawn Sturges, murdered, of course, by accident by the Russians when they were going after the Skripal family. I mean, if you were actually commissioning a script on it, And you pointed out some of the things that have actually happened. If you were writing fiction, I wonder if a script editor would hand it back and say, there's no way that Russian operatives could be murdering people on UK soil without the UK population being more concerned. And you'd have to say, well, no, they have. And we're not, whether you're following the news or not. There's not enough anger. How can Farage still be talking about Putin being the most admirable politician on the planet after he's ordered the murder of people on British soil? It's extraordinary, but happening, but real. Do you think it would work? Do you think your friends that don't follow the news would come out of a good box set thinking, crikey?
I think if you make it a talking point, if you make it that water cooler moment, then the people will be forced to kind of get involved in the conversation a little bit. How many people started watching The Traitors this season because they felt left out when they couldn't talk about the Celebrity Traitors season?
I think you might be onto something, actually. But it would have to be brilliant, which is easier said than done. You know, some of the biggest brains in movie-making history have been associated with some of the biggest flops. It would have to be brilliant, which is another reason to get James Graham on board. I like that. And I don't think it sounds childish or childlike at all. I really don't. I think it's a brilliant idea, but the caveats would be quality control and guarantee. And also talking points. I mean, there's a reason why Keir Starmer just mentioned Brexit. Brexit was sold to the British public as an act of self-isolation, of an act of, pretending that sovereignty meant something, as opposed to pooling resources against a common enemy. The Churchillian legacy of European cooperation and European Union being undermined by the Daily Mail, Nigel Farage, Boris Johnson, Jacob Rees-Mogg, all of these people who portray themselves as patriots have rendered us less safe than we have ever been. And so, unfortunately, to persuade people that they need to be more worried about things is also to remind them, in 52% of the cases, that they voted for the peril that we've been put in. Or at least they voted to make everything worse than it already is. That's why he had to say this isn't... If you're wondering why he's mentioned Brexit, he's telling our allies that those days are over. The days of people claiming to be patriots while deliberately undermining British and European security are behind us. And he's wrong, unfortunately, because Farage is currently leading in the polls and he's the biggest Kremlin fanboy to pollute British politics since Nathan Gill. So I don't know how you persuade... Well, you've got these people riding high in the polls. How do you persuade people to be worried about their political heroes? Farage has two political heroes, Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump, both sworn enemies of European interests and British interests, both subscribing to the idea, both perpetrating and selling the idea. We should be more worried about refugees than we should about the regime that just invaded Ukraine or the regime that's shooting its own citizens in the face for the crime of protesting against hideous policies. I don't know. Bob's in Hartlepool. Bob, what would you like to say?
James, the first thing I want to say, James, I'm sorry, I'm not Bob from Bolton. Bob from Bournemouth or Basildon.
Or Harry from Hartlepool, but here we are. Yeah, I'll take what I can get, Bob. I'll take what I can get. Go on.
So the thing I wanted to mention, James, something that made my blood run cold, a few weeks ago, I was listening to Any Questions on Radio 4, and Tobias Elwood was on, who I think is the Tory...
Former defence minister.
Defence minister.
Yeah.
So you think this is a guy who probably knows a little bit about what he's talking about. And he came out with a fact, and it made my blood run cold, because he was really worried about the situation, and I think he wants people to understand just the gravity of the situation that we're in. And he said, the British Armed Forces, we have 147 tanks. He says, Russia are making 150 tanks a week. And that was something, you think, if they're making...
I think you might have got the wrong end of the stick on that. I don't want to shoot... I mean, certainly the parallel is strong. I know we've got 100 and... There was a specific type of tank, a few, that was going to be upgraded to the Challenger 2 to the Challenger 3 was 147, because they would stay until about 2040. But so I'm not 100% sure on the numbers, and I mean, you might be right, but just in case you're not, the point still stands. Russia is producing ordnance at a rate of knots, and we are going in the opposite direction. We're reducing ours over the years.
Absolutely. And if they are making 150 tanks a week...
But why did your blood run cold? Because that means you are susceptible to the threat of Russian military conflict?
Do you know what, James? I think I was always susceptible to the threat of Russian military conflict. And even, like, years ago, even before Brexit, I remember having an argument with somebody on Facebook, as we all did. And I pointed out the fact that, like, being part of the EU, we were part of that bulwark against Russian aggression.
Yeah.
And all these people were waiting and said, oh, Russia's a spent force, Russia's, you know, like, Russia's, you know, they're on the knees, this, that, and the other. And that was the type. And
Farage was marching around the place saying that we have to leave because otherwise we'll end up in a European army. And nobody stopped to say, what are you talking about, man?
Well, here's the question,
which side,
James,
are you on?
Exactly. And what does a European army even mean? If I wanted to join the army, would I think, well, do I want to join the British army or do I join the European army?
It'd be like NATO, wouldn't it?
Forces.
So you've got the German and British highest ranking military chiefs making a joint appeal today. So there's not any great mystery to me about what a European army would look like. And since Donald Trump has sought to undermine NATO, the importance and the value of a European army has absolutely rocketed in value. So I never understood that. Do you want to have a crack at that? That was going to be the second bit of the phone in, but I think we're going to run out of time. Why was Farage telling people to be frightened of Britain being in a European army? What was the logic behind that? Do we know?
Do you know what? I think sometimes he just comes out with things. It's the tone.
But he said it all the time. He said it again and again. And it doesn't. I don't know quite what he was telling people to be frightened of. Do you?
Well, exactly. And that's exactly the thing. And I think if you turned around to people who were frightened of European armies, if you said to them, well, what are you actually frightened of? It's like when you say, like, you know, like when people phone and say, oh, what all the laws?
Those are the days. Those are the days.
Yeah.
What is it? I don't know. I mean, I genuinely don't know. The best stats I've got 288 Challenger 2 main battle tanks, of which about half are considered operational, the rest being used for parts. So it could be worse than what you said and what I picked you up on. And about 148 of them due to be upgraded to Challenger 3s by the end of the decade. So, yeah, give or take, it would appear that Russia is knocking out every year the amount of tanks that we have in total at this point in history. 11:45 is the time. So how do you persuade the public? Why did it trouble Bob? Why does Bob's blood run cold at statistics that you barely register? And what would it take to make your blood run cold, like Bob's blood? I don't know the answer to that. And rarely, for a phone-in where I begin it by expressing my own ignorance, rarely, I don't think I've got any clearer answer on how you fix this problem than I had at the beginning of the discussion. It's 11:45.
EC, this morning, on Nick Ferrari at Breakfast.
Children could be banned from social media as soon as this year, under powers announced by the Prime Minister.
Liz Kendall, who is Secretary of State for Science, Innovation and Technology.
Technology's changing really, really quickly, but it took us something like almost 8 years to pass and implement the Online Safety Act. 8 years! I mean, you know how the technology is changing. So I think, just like we have a finance bill every year, we're going to have to start thinking about updating our legislation around technology much more regularly.
That is a very interesting idea. Would you and your colleagues be ready to do effectively an annual statement from the Secretary of State for Science, Innovation and Technology?
Yeah, you've got to.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
All right, resistance, sir. Let's climb.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, my knee's playing up again.
Have you ever had it looked at?
No, but I've been doing a few stretches.
When my shoulder went, Benenden Health got me expert help, showed me exactly where I was going wrong.
30 seconds, people.
Press play on your health with physiotherapy and much more. All for less than £16 per person per month. Search Benenden Health. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services, including physio. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Thanks for a lovely evening. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
Yeah, okay. That'd be lovely.
Oh, gosh, sorry. I didn't mean... I just wanted you to see my new Wix kitchen. It's just been installed.
At Wix, our experts will support you every step of the way, from a free kitchen design service through to a professional installation. Plus, right now, find big savings in the Wix kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms apply.
Okay, do emails. Ah, burnt toast. And now I've got to sort my repeat prescription.
Or just tap the NHS app.
The one I've already got?
Yep, you can check test results, view your GP health record, and request repeat prescriptions anytime, anywhere.
All while the kettle's boiling?
Before it boils. And turning on notifications means you'll know the moment you get a new message.
Mm.
We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Never miss a message. Request repeat prescriptions and more when you tap the NHS app.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw and you think of a way to spend £1 million.
I'd deposit regularly into a retirement fund that safely tracks the market.
It's your lucky day and you win the birthday draw.
I can't believe it!
And you buy a snake and a superbike instead.
Yeah, baby!
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search the birthday draw and enter now. From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only. No purchase necessary.
And when teams feel supported, they can achieve anything.
Sorry. Just had even more of my team are off ill.
Have you tried Benenden Health? It's easy to set up. They've got a GP helpline you can book 24/7.
Where were we?
A coffee break, hopefully.
Press play on your people's health with a wide range of healthcare services for less than £16 per employee per month. Search Benenden for Business. Fee reviewed periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It is 11:49 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Quick shout to Sharon, whose son is currently in Norway with a coalition of forces to show strength to Russia. And remember that Donald Trump's designs upon Greenland are dressed up as being concerned about threats from the East, but he has never, ever, in either term as president, done anything that might even raise one of Vladimir Putin's eyebrows. In fact, everything he's done, particularly in the context of Europe and the UK in particular, could have been written for him by Vladimir Putin. And of course, the last time they announced a peace deal with regard to Ukraine, it had been written for him by the Kremlin, as became clear when people pointed out that some of the translation into English was completely literal. It was as if you'd literally taken something in Russian and stuck it through Google Translate and all of the attendant flaws and problems that you would expect came out the other end. It is 10 to 12. Paul writes, I have pals who voted Brexit because they didn't want a European army. Now they think we should join forces with the French, the Poles, the Germans, the Dutch and any other country with an army to keep Putin at bay. You couldn't make it up. I think they're ahead of most people, Paul, albeit that they dropped a bit of a clangor back in 2016. They seem to be more alive to the threat that Europe faces today than an awful lot of people who weren't daft enough to vote for Brexit. And Russia are scared of a European army. Farage denounced the idea of a European army. The end, writes Justin. Yeah, well, I mean, you might be leaving a little bit between the lines there, Justin, but it is a mystery that I'm sure someone will ask him about soon. And indeed, speaking of Farage, Henry Reilly is off this week. So our new feature, keeping an eye on what would happen if we were to treat his political party in the same way that the right-wing media treats the Labour Party, has not exactly been postponed. It's just having a bit of... we're just doing it slightly different. Well, look, Henry's not here, so I'd be doing it on my own, or with the help of other colleagues. One of whom, Phoebe Abruzzese, is LBC's reporter in the North East and has been following up on one of the stories Henry discussed with us last week, and it's very hard to keep up with all the resignations and removals of Reform UK councillors, but it is one in County Durham that has drawn our attention and to which Phoebe has dedicated her efforts over the weekend. What do we know, Phoebe? What have you discovered?
Well, James, Reform's grip on County Durham has been shaken by the resignation of one of its councillors, who's accused the party's local leadership of bullying and belittling members. Reform swept to power here last year, winning 65 of the council's 98 seats. But Nick Brown quit the party last week, claiming there's a lack of leadership. He told me members had been undermined internally.
I have made an allegation of a lapse in the code of conduct for members by Councillor Darren Grimes. So it would boil down to, you know, your definition of whether it's appropriate behaviour for someone who aspires to be a politician. I would argue that that was not the case. And it's not an isolated incident, neither with me and not with anyone else. And I think really you just have to look at Darren and other people's track record of complaint.
That follows an alleged hostile, inappropriate exchange on an email thread. Broadcaster turned politician Darren Grimes, I'll read you his post on social media. He said, apparently I'm too harsh on underperforming councillors, guilty and proud. I won't apologise for demanding a top flight team when residents are paying top rate bills. Now, James, we've seen messages in a party WhatsApp group in which Councillor Brown described some comments as not appropriate in any forum, public or private. He told me who he'd seen attacked.
Well, it would be anybody who's not on board with the Nigel Farage Express. I mean, me is one example. Other councillors in other parties, members of DCC, members of the public.
In his resignation letter, Nick accused local leaders as acting as yes men to the National Party because they want to be selected to run as MPs. He says Reform was elected to shake up local government, but isn't going far enough.
Unfortunately, some people are in it for their careers. They're in it for the power that being an MP accrues or that they perceive. We've become a bunch of yes men in hoc, to Westminster and to Nigel.
Durham County Council says dealing with complaints about Reform councillors has cost just over £18,000, though none received since May last year have progressed into a formal investigation. Darren Grimes has branded them political lawfare by his opposition. And council leader Andrew Husbands rejected the allegations outright, telling LBC there's no evidence to back them up. He says Reform in Durham operates to the highest standards and insists the party has minimal interference from headquarters.
Just to clear one thing up, if you could, that Darren Grimes' character, when he talks about a top flight team, is he in it?
He is indeed. He's deputy leader at the council.
And that's the top flight team, is it?
Yes, it is.
Right. Thank you, Phoebe. Great stuff. Just one of the stories that we touched on last week. I think in the end there were, 22 stories that we unearthed last week involving this outfit. And there are more this week, which we will be sharing with you imminently. But for now, that is Phoebe Abrasasi, our reporter in the Northeast, having a look at events in County Durham. And it is, I suppose, there's a Farage link to the conversation about Russian threats to Europe, because he, of course, considers Vladimir Putin to be the most admirable politician on the planet, as opposed to the bravest man he's ever met. That would be Donald Trump. Keith in Inverness, how do we persuade Bob in Bolton, or indeed Doris in Dorking, or your Uncle Keith on Facebook, that we should be worried about the Russian threat to the point of backing increased spending on defence? Keith, what do you reckon?
Yeah, thanks, James. First time caller, long time listener. I think it's almost not parking the Russian issue, but helping the country to recognise what a soft underbelly we have in terms of our resilience in the round. I mean, you look at the impacts of extreme weather and climate and how exposed we all are as communities and individuals to something that might impact us for 24 or 36 hours. If you extrapolate that out and you look at the impact of Russian aggression on energy infrastructure and the long-term impact that could have on people, their families and businesses, that's where the fear starts to come from. If you can tie it into stuff that is happening already, and this could be...
It's too late. Because, I mean, the biggest example of it would be the claims that our free speech is under threat, and probably the demonisation of refugees in particular and immigration in general. And I don't know, the Labour government seems to behave as if those ships have sailed, as if there's no point trying to win those battles anymore, because public opinion is both huge and wrong.
Well, absolutely. But I don't disagree, but I think it's trying to tie it back to getting that narrative. How is this going to impact me, my family, my livelihood in the short, medium and long term? And it's only when you get, struck over the face with it really helps you understand how exposed you are. I mean, up in the north of Scotland, we've had recent extreme weather. It has cut the power off 24, 36 hours. And in the middle of winter, it's only pales into insignificance compared to what's happening in Ukraine.
Yes.
But when you're exposed to it and you don't have the access to the internet, your emergency services are at risk. You've got a family to feed and to keep warm. That is exposure. And that would be, multiple times more significant if there was aggression from Russia in this country.
That was a little unfair to your fellow Scott earlier when I kept complaining that to Al it was in Glasgow. I say, I'm not frightened. But he was trying to portray a moment in which the internet goes down. So cyber warfare, much easier to perhaps reach people with than traditional warfare, although, of course, we have both in Ukraine at the moment. I mean, I think probably people just can't quite buy the idea that Putin's imperial ambitions stretch beyond, you know, the borders that they're familiar with. Eastern Europeans will. They'll tell you that they live in... there's a reason why countries like Estonia teach fake news to children so that they can recognise the propaganda that our social media is awash with. But I just don't think people quite buy the idea that his ambitions extend beyond where he currently is, you know?
No, and that's a really difficult message to sell. You know, people are going to be inclined to believe it or not, but what people will believe and where you can start to build up a little more resilience is helping them to understand what is real and what's happening on the doorstep. And it starts to create some preparedness, which we just don't have, James.
I know we don't. And that should be something that makes my blood run cold. And it does a bit, perhaps, I hope, more than average, but it doesn't make enough blood run cold enough to constitute the kind of change that both the German and the British Chief of Defence, Defence Chiefs want to see. I don't know. I wonder if geography plays a part, if where you are makes you more attuned to what threats are posed. I'll tell you something really chilling, though, and something that I think is true. When historians are the, God forbid that they do so from a perspective of us not having been ready and prepared for a threat that then materialised. But either way, whether the threat materialises or not, when historians of the future try to unpick why this complacency was so widespread, part of the reason will be that many of the forces that we might rely upon to keep us informed had shared interests with the Kremlin for much of the period that we're discussing. So whether it is Donald Trump who floats your boat, or Boris Johnson, or Brexit, the idea that those obvious harms being posed to Western security and Western democracy were cheered for and championed by Western politicians and Western media figures, while simultaneously being on the dream list of Vladimir Putin, means that properly investigating has huge holdback. It's why Starmer talks this weekend about Brexit being over, about those days being behind us, because why on earth would Boris Johnson have launched any investigation whatsoever into Russian interference?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, Sir Keir Starmer has promised to respond more quickly to close loopholes in laws designed to protect children online. Plans include restricting the use of VPNs and limits on speaking with online chatbots. A consultation on banning social media for under-16s has already been announced. The Prime Minister says more action is needed, though, because the status quo isn't good enough.
We as a government need to be up there alongside parents, providing leadership and support for them when it comes to social media. And we will. Now, we've already announced that we're going to do a consultation on banning social media for under-16s. And that will start very soon. Nobody can make the argument that things can be left as they are. They can't. They're not protective of children.
Separately, the Prime Minister has denied knowing about an alleged investigation into journalists by a prominent think tank. Labour Together is accused of hiring a PR firm in 2023 to look into journalists who reported on its funding. A Cabinet Office investigation is underway. The Kremlin has rejected accusations that it was responsible for the death of the jailed Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny. The UK and four other European nations say they have evidence that Russia killed Mr. Navalny using a toxin from poisoned dart frogs in 2024. Moscow says the claims are biased and unfounded. Tatiana Fokinina worked alongside Mr. Navalny as part of the Russian opposition.
I think we all knew he was killed, and it's great that so much work by so many people has been done to find out exactly what has happened. And I think it's very important for us and for the family to have that clarity.
It's reported that ministers are considering bringing forward plans for a big increase in defence spending. Currently, the government's committed to spending 2.5% of national income on the armed forces by 2029 and 3% by the 2030s, but that could be brought forward. The government has told LBC that it doesn't comment on speculation. And new weather warnings for snow and ice have been issued by the Met Office for much of the UK. A yellow warning's in place for northern Scotland from 3 o'clock this afternoon until Tuesday morning. Large areas of England, Scotland and Northern Ireland fall under separate alerts for ice. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 25 at 10,471. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, scattered showers and sunny spells for most. Some wintry showers on higher ground, a high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 12 is the time. I think a complete change of pace now. And I don't know how much longer we can keep up, because we'll all be gone. I can keep up the... it's like a tide coming in, except it's not going to go back out again. And the way that AI is particularly encroaching into various workplaces and various jobs. It was a photographer, wasn't it? What was the first call you heard? Either on this show or elsewhere, of course, on LBC. What was the first call you heard that made you realise that someone was doomed? I think it was a food photographer. I think we had a caller who specialised in photographing food for recipe books or magazine articles, and who was pretty clear that they were already staring professional redundancy in the face. And not redundancy that comes with a big check or anything like that, but just there is no longer any call upon my services. There is no longer any need for what I do. And I don't know why, of all the things that it could have been, of all the jobs that it could have been, that one just stuck in my mind. I think because I could feel it so clearly, because I had no comebacks. I couldn't say, oh, well, you'll be all right, don't worry, you'll be fine. I couldn't think of anything I could say to give him hope or encouragement or indeed to argue with the conclusion that he'd arrived at. Someone photographing food. There's a lovely story. Well, I don't know if it's lovely or not. That's probably me being a little bit, I don't know quite what the word would be, maybe fetishizing manual labour as a fully paid up member of the middle classes. But the headline on a piece in the Times today, white collar workers who are leaving their jobs for the trades. There was some research published last month that showed the jobs that are most threatened by AI. And it was pretty chilling reading for an awful lot of people, including radio presenters, who came in at about fourth, but they were the ones that played records. They weren't the ones that that do what I do. But the list of jobs which were most vulnerable to AI was, well, it pretty arresting, actually. It'd stop you in your tracks. And one of the reasons why people are apparently moving from office-based or desk-based work to more hands-on. See, call it hands-on work rather than manual work, and it automatically feels and sounds a little bit different, is, of course, the threat that's posed by artificial intelligence. For more than a decade, the government has been trying to get young people in particular to sign up to trade apprenticeships. But the urgency of the task, or the importance of the task, has accelerated enormously with artificial intelligence replacing office work, replicating office work. And you have to be a bit careful. So I'd much rather hear from an academic, for example, rather than someone in the business of hiring people to do hands-on work. Here's Book Teaserlink, a lecturer in economics at King's College London. We are definitely seeing shifts away from more AI-exposed occupations, especially white-collar work. Our traditional training pipeline is you do an entry-level job, get the expertise you need, and then develop yourself into a more senior expert in whatever field you're in. That pipeline seems to be disappearing at the moment. It's a major public policy concern how to deal with it. And the Times has spoken to a bunch of people. One gave up his business management course in order to run a restaurant. Other people have turned their back on graphic design in order to work with their hands, either as a masseur or as something like that. There's going to be a finite number of jobs you can do. One works as an electrician for Camden Council, having a, this is a 46-year-old mother of two who wanted to be a musician. And then she took a desk job and then she decided to become an electrician for Camden Council. Microsoft put together the research that I'm talking about. I shall share some of that with you shortly. The 10 jobs least affected by AI, by generative AI. Fascinating. So if you want a job that is AI-proof, shall I do it in ascending order? Shall I finish with the number one job and begin with the number 10 job? The 10 jobs that are AI-proof are logging equipment operators in at 10. I don't know how much call there is for logging equipment operators in the United Kingdom. I suspect it's, I think of it more as a sort of Canadian or a North American practice. But if you want a job or if you're encouraging the kids to get a job that is completely immune to the threat of artificial intelligence, then logging equipment operators is in at 10. At 9, motorboat operators. Again, I mean, we are an island nation. You'd have thought that being a motorboat operator would have quite a bit of a cachet for Brits. At 8, orderlies. At 7, do you know, I actually thought about this the other day. I don't know how Microsoft has conducted this research, but floor sanders and finishers. We had our floor sanded the other day, and I did actually find, because the machinery, I did actually find myself thinking, I don't think that you, this is, you're going to be safe. You'd have thought you could get a robot to do it, but you couldn't. It's fiddly work. I told you the story, didn't I? I did tell you the story about the cat and the floor sand, yeah. If you didn't hear that story, you can listen back on Global Player. Pile driver operators. Is that the big drills on building sites, is it? Rail track laying and maintenance equipment operators. I mean, listen, no offence to anybody, but I don't know which of these jobs you'd actually fancy. Rail track laying and maintenance equipment would be nice when the weather's good. Motorboat operators? I don't know. Number 4, foundry mould and core makers. I mean, your guess is as good as mine. At 3, water treatment plant and system operators. At 2, and this ties in with Mystery Hour last week, bridge and lock operators, or lock tenders. And at number 1, the top 10 jobs least affected by generative AI. In at 1, the safest job on the planet at the moment. Shall I do it as a hook and tease? Do you want to try and guess what it is? You're not allowed to look it up. Sea lion trainer's not there, Paul. Very funny. Very niche. I don't think anyone's going to correctly guess this, so I won't do it as a hook and tease. A dredge operator. Presumably, that's the vessels that drag muck and mud from the bottom of canals and rivers and then deposit it elsewhere. So the story today is not so much about those jobs, although we'll touch on that shortly. The story is about moving from white-collar work, from office-based or desk-based work, into working with your hands. The most obvious question I have to ask you is whether or not you've done it and whether or not it was motivated by AI. But you know how this program works. I want to know what the big differences are. And I want to dig into the social impacts here as well, because we've talked in the past about the construction industry in particular, and I mean all the professions there, and the unskilled labour as well, the trades. We've talked about all the trades. And there's been a slightly surprising air to those conversations that we've had in the past. And I'm going to loosely describe it as most people who've spent their life working in construction wouldn't have wanted their sons to follow them. I'm being a bit man-centric on that, but obviously women work in the construction trade more than ever, and I don't know whether you'd have different ambitions for your sons or your daughters, but the physical toll taken by manual work is something that we have had caller after caller describe to us. People who are clear that they're 20s and 30s may have been advertisements for doing this sort of job, but their 50s and 60s are the precise opposite. So I'm wondering whether or not this is a bit of a moment where people are moving away from jobs that are threatened by AI and thinking that working with their hands or moving into manual labour would be preferable, but they're not pretty clear. They're not really clear on what the actual consequences and what the long-term reality of it would be. 12 minutes after 12. An awful lot of people screaming at the radio, including Steve's wife, all the jobs that are also going to be AI-proof, and she is a hairdresser. So there are some jobs. So would you become a hairdresser rather than doing a white-collar job at the moment? I don't know. But what I want to know is this. The easy question to answer is whether or not you've done it. You've moved from office work or clerical work, white-collar work, desk-based work, to doing something with your hands. Question one is, did you do it because of the threat of AI? But question two, the bigger question that I'm more interested in, describe the big differences to me. For good or for ill, I'm quite dewy-eyed about this kind of stuff, so my initial reaction would be that you have a fuller life, that you are happy with the change that you made. I had a dream about building a wall last night that I've just remembered. So, you know, the idea that doing something with your hands makes you feel more fulfilled, makes you feel more at one with the universe. I don't know whether it's true or not, because I've never done that. It's a very, well, I tell a lie. I spent 2 weeks working on a building site in Doncaster in 1988, but I don't think I can draw upon that anymore for any deep and meaningful insights. So what is the key difference? If you've done both, if you've moved from office work or desk-based work to working with your hands, what are the key differences? What are the key changes? Is it better or worse? Are we becoming a little bit daft, a bit kind of fetishized, middle class is fetishizing working class by thinking or claiming that it improves your life or that it gets better? Or is it something that you would encourage others to do? And then the harder bit to pin down, and I've touched on it a bit with construction, is would you encourage people to actually do that? We need loads more builders in this country, constantly. We always do. Just before Brexit, we were probably in slightly healthier shape than we are now. But the difficulty of persuading young people to train on the trades, to train as electricians or as roofers or as bricklayers, as builders, whatever, or plumbers, the difficulty in doing that is well documented. Various governments, whether they're motivated by a sort of quasi-racist desire to reduce the number of foreigners in our workforce, or whether or not it is actually addressing under or unemployment among young people educated here, that various and successive governments have tried and largely failed to tempt more young people into the construction trades. And I can't help thinking that that is not because of anything particularly complicated, but is chiefly because it's just bloody hard work. I mean, it is literally back-breaking work. So you get these nice headlines in newspapers like The Times about people moving from white-collar work into manual work, white-collar workers who are leaving their jobs for the trades. And you read into it, and they're not really, with the exception of the electrician in Camden, they're not really the kind of trades you think of when you drive past a building site in the pouring rain and just imagine for a moment what it would be like to be doing a shift on there today. They are slightly more rose-tinted trades, perhaps. But I want you to tell me. I mean, welding. Because the jobs that are safe from AI are all going to be jobs that involve some form of physical exertion, some form of labour, some form of physical labour. And the jobs that are most vulnerable are all going to be jobs. I've got 50 of the jobs that are vulnerable here, and only 10 of the jobs that aren't. But the 50 jobs, or 40 jobs, number one, interpreters and translators. Number two, historians. If we have time, we may move into the question of whether or not your profession is now under threat. But the question I want you to answer now is the difference. If you move from one to the other, what are the differences? What are the qualitative, the measurable differences? So I'm not really interested in doing it because I think there's going to be more security, or doing it because the job is going to be safer. I'm interested in what the reality of those two jobs is actually like. So you move from what we used to call blue collar. You move from what we used to call white collar to blue collar, from working behind a desk to working with your hands, and the changes that it makes to your livelihood and your life is what I'm trying to collect now. 0345 6060 973. And then if we have time, we may look at whether or not the tides of AI are now lapping up at the shores of your livelihood, when a year ago or 2 years ago, you might have thought that you were safe. It's 12:16.
This is LBC.
We asked patients at Great Ormond Street Hospital what makes someone special.
They can make me laugh lots and lots and lots and lots. they have to write arts and crafts. Their favourite food is chocolate cake.
They might be a magician, so they can magically make me better.
They will be kind.
Does that sound like you? Be someone special and leave a gift in your will to Gosh Charity. Search Gosh Legacy for your Gifts in Wills guide.
Thank you.
With up to £3,000 every year towards career growth at Amazon, I started in the warehouse knowing I could train in things like coding or robotics. It turns my job into a career. So it means I can be who I want to be, even if I haven't quite decided who that is yet.
Amazon, opening doors with up to £3,000 every year towards career growth. Eligibility conditions about type and duration of employment apply.
So, close your eyes, picture the scene. Just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island. Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wix to design our new kitchen.
At Wix, we have over 80 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000. And, right now, find big savings in the Wix kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms apply.
Discover the world of Dobble, back in McDonald's Happy Meal. Race through the worlds of music, sports, space and more. How quickly can your little one spot the match? Dobble's bursting with fun. Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 5th of March 2026, from 11 a.m. Includes one pre-selected book or toy. Dobble range comprises toys only, while stocks last.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's 12:18. Is it working with humans more than working with your hands? No, it's not, is it? Because you could be working in quite solitary circumstances, physically, as opposed to, and you could be on your own in an office, or you could be working with loads of other people. So scratch that. Pretend I never said it. Robert is in Liverpool to talk to us about trading in the white collar for the blue collar and what it does to you, what it does to your life. Robert, what can you tell us?
Good morning, James.
Hello,
first time caller, long time listener.
Welcome.
Thank you for taking the call. I just want to say that I was 30 years in banking. It was something I hated, but I was too scared to do anything about it.
Did you know you hated it at the time?
Yes.
You did?
Yes, I did. But obviously, young man, young family, mortgage.
Yeah.
There were marriage complications as well. I wanted to do the right thing by my family, but in the end, over the long period of time, I got gradually more depressed and a breakdown at work on a number of occasions, counselling, and in the end, they said, take gardening leave. Gosh. And I thought, well, hang on a minute, my dad left from being a wagon driver to becoming a gardener. Why can't I change at the age of 50? From being in a bank, to a job that I hated, to being outside, working with my hands, and getting an entirely different perspective on life. Now, admittedly, that was 5 years ago, where obviously the impact of AI wasn't yet upon us.
Yeah.
But I still think the story is still applicable to your phone
in. No, that's what the question is. It's about the difference. It's, and I sense from your voice that you haven't looked back.
Yeah, absolutely. Admittedly, I'm in a good position because I was able to take early redundancy due to sickness, I should say.
Yeah.
So therefore, I get half of my pension. I get, you know, half of what my wage was, which wasn't very much. I'm only getting about £800 a month. But then I do my gardening on top between March and October, and that sees me through, and it's a wonderful way of living. Admittedly, like you said before, I'm on my own, but, you know, you go to little garden jobs. I'm working 5.5 days a week, and just go around with my little van.
And how have
doing
you changed?
Job and
how
loving
have you,
it.
Have, from the outside, how somebody who knows you and cares for you, how would they describe the changes that you've undergone?
Well, my mum has got videos of me at Christmas time 15, 20 years ago, and I looked like I was waiting to be hung.
Oh,
whereas now, you know, I'm over to see her every week. I'm able to take her out for a meal. I do her garden as part of my little round. I do my father-in-law's garden over here in Liverpool. And, you know, it's all kind of like little... I'm only a tidier-upper. Like, you know, nothing
no,
technical.
No, I get it. No,
but,
I get it.
But I do the job. You can see the results of what you've done. And you can walk away satisfied. I go home from every day at work. I'm tired, but I'm satisfied.
I get it all. I mean, I'm conscious of the fact that some people listening wouldn't be able to make the changes that you've described for financial reasons, whether or not they're qualified for an early pension or not. It wouldn't be simply the demands of our lifestyles, particularly when we have families, can be so immense that we can't really contemplate doing anything else. But I am intrigued to know one thing, and I wonder whether you can put it into words. Why did you hate the old job so much?
Oh, God. the sense of isolation, the BS, the whole jokery, the artificiality of working in an office. I was saying to your advisor when I first rang through, there has been a program just recently on YouTube done by the German television people, DW.
Yeah.
And they do an analysis of why working in an office makes you ill and the analysis of burnout.
Yeah.
And it ticks so many boxes that I recognised. I mean, I was suffering from acute depression, suicidal thoughts.
Oh,
sense of isolation at work, breakdown of relationship with colleagues, complete paranoia about many things, and I just needed... I mean, they forced the change on me. I was too frightened to do anything myself.
Yeah, that's going to be the way sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah, I had to be pushed, but I'm glad that it happened in retrospect, because I'm now living a lovely little life, a very simple life with my wife, and no complications. I mean, I was able to use the pension to help pay. We used to rent the house, and now we were able to pay it off. We own the house now.
It's the fascinating algorithm or the equation at the heart of human existence, and it's linked to the question of when is enough enough? How much is enough? We think we need this. We think, but this is me speaking, and this is me fetishizing hard work as a typical soft-handed middle class person, and I want to guard against that. Robert hasn't fallen into that trap, but a couple of words of caution, because this is what I'm talking about. If you want to have a blue-collar job like mine, I work on a farm, writes Jack. I sometimes do 100 hours a week in the sun, rain and wind. I make minimum wage and can't afford to get married, have kids or buy a house, so I'd stay in your office if I were you. And Al writes, gardener of 27 years, working in Teddington. It's brutal on the back, knees and elbows. To make the money to own a home has taken its toll. I'm only 45. I've got no pension, no real security. I love it, but now I'm worried that I'll be replaced by people who've been replaced by AI. So, yeah, I hadn't thought of that. Neil's in Hastings. Neil, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome, mate.
I was in the graphic design industry for almost 30 years, 29 years. Loved it. It was my dream job. But it was the demands of clients that forced me to look elsewhere. I was basically doing 80-hour weeks. But I loved the job. It was absolutely my dream job. But I knew I had to get out of it.
Not threatened by AI, just feeling the walls closing in.
This was back in 2007. So I don't even think AI was a thing then. I needed to claim my life back, basically. So my wife was training to be a priest. And I thought, I need something that I'm going to...
That's something you don't hear every day.
I needed to move... We were in London, you see, so yeah. I always wanted to work around London because that's where everything was.
Of course.
So I knew that I was going to have to, once she did what she did, I was going to have to move out. So I thought, well, I've got to find something that... So I decided on plumbing, basically.
Really? How old were you?
I was 45.
And you'd started from scratch as a plumber?
I mean, I've always been pretty handy. I'm quite practical. I like doing things correctly. So I would always be handy in the house. But I thought, right, that's it. Let's do a trade. So I did training for about 2 years while I was working. And then finally qualified and went my way on it.
And do you have, as a plumber, you're less enthralled to the client than you were as a graphic designer. So as a plumber, I don't want to overgeneralize. Yeah. But plumbers probably have more agency than graphic designers in that you tell me the details of the job you're going to do, not the other way around.
That is true, but it took me a while to work that out. Because I did so long hours, I was finding myself working on people's houses, and they'd kind of come up and sort of say, excuse me, are you going to be finished soon? And it would be 6 o'clock, 6:30, whereas they were expecting me to have gone by four. So that took a while to get used to, because I was just knocking out the hours and not realising that, I should go home at 4 o'clock. But what it did for me was that I suddenly was getting home at 5, 6 o'clock in the evening, sometimes earlier, and me and my wife suddenly had a life together.
Even though you have to share it with God.
That came along. That was okay. I mean, I'd become a Christian back in 1997, so that was okay. I was happy to do that.
No, I'm teasing. Because you could have been a carpenter like Jesus, but you went with plumbing instead.
Yeah, I could have been an electrician, but I saw the pile
you
of
saw
books
the light.
They needed. Yeah.
Sorry.
No, the pile of books for plumbing was half the size of the electrician, so that's the
was
one
it?
I went for.
Yeah, I suppose so. And you do jobs in houses. You're not on the sites.
No, I decided not to do that.
Because that's a different kettle of fish entirely, isn't it, I think?
Absolutely. And what I've found is I could be so much more informative to the client. I would tell them and explain to them. And I just felt I was much more kind of forward with what I was going to do and how I was going to do it because of the background I'd already had.
Yeah, okay.
So, the main thing was that my life became my own. I was earning half the amount.
Sure.
But it didn't matter because I actually was enjoying the life.
No, and also, if you were still in graphic design now, you'd be very much on the front line of jobs that are being replaced by AI, and plumbers are going to be safe for the foreseeable future. Although not as safe, I have to remind everybody, as dredge operators. Do you think, do we give a Ray Liotta if a dredge operator rings in? Because, no, you have to be a dredge operator who used to be a banker. Don't you? So you have to have gone from white collar to blue collar. So it's all very well being a dredge operator, but in order to get a Ray Liotta, you'd have to have been a banker or an office worker and then given it all up to become a dredge operator, which would be a very odd ambition to foment while you were working in an office. Be sitting there looking out the window thinking, what I really want to do is operate dredges. I'm sick and tired of spreadsheets. And campaigns or doing scripts and pictures. What I really want to do, all I've ever really wanted to do is operate a dredger. I think the Ray Liotta's will be staying in the cupboard today, Keith. It's coming up to 12:30. Matt Hewitt is here with your headlines.
Sir Keir Starmer says the status quo is not good enough when it comes to regulating the internet. He's promising to strengthen protections for children beyond a potential social media ban, including blocking them from using virtual private networks to bypass age restrictions. The Kremlin's rejecting the European, including the UK's, assessment of how opposition leader Alexei Navalny died 2 years ago. Allies have determined a toxin from poison dart frogs was used by Russia. And ministers are declining to comment on reports. They're thinking of bringing in a big increase in defence spending. It could reach 3% of national income by the end of this parliament. LBC weather. Scattered showers and sunny spells for most. Wintry showers on higher ground. Highs of 2 to 10 degrees.
This is LBC.
You've built a career.
You've faced the challenges.
You've gained the skills to do more.
To stretch your abilities.
And help support your community.
At Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary, we value life experience.
So whether your experience comes from business, healthcare, the trades, or raising a family,
your next challenge is waiting for you. Search Hampshire Police Jobs and join Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard this Air France message. Craving an unforgettable destination where culture, history, architecture, romance, and the excellence of French gastronomy all meet? With Air France, Paris and all its delights have never been closer. Starting March the 29th, enjoy twice daily flights to Paris from £98 from London Gatwick, return including tax.
Elegance is a journey. Air France.
To book and for terms and conditions, visit airfrance.co.uk.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quarter Pillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears. And four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park. Book now at nutcatch.com.
Thanks for a lovely evening. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
Yeah, okay. That'd be lovely.
Oh, gosh, sorry. I didn't mean... I just wanted you to see my new Wickes kitchen. It's just been installed.
At Wickes, our experts will support you every step of the way, from a free kitchen design service through to a professional installation. Plus, right now, find big savings in the Wickes kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wickes. Terms apply.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
It is 12:33. Some extraordinary reporting just dropping while we've been on air on the bylinetimes.com about the links between Steve Bannon, Jeffrey Epstein, and now Boris Johnson and Nigel Farage as well. Bannon claiming in footage from a documentary that was never actually broadcast but was recorded in 2019 that he collaborated with Boris Johnson on the resignation speech he gave after stepping down as Foreign Secretary in order to help to try to topple Theresa May. Also a little bit embarrassing. There is evidence that Jeffrey Epstein texted Steve Bannon to say good work on LBC. This would be after Steve Bannon came into the studio, I think with Nigel Farage, actually. So, I mean, what a week for Henry to take off when we're supposed to be properly analysing and scrutinising Nigel Farage's outfit in the way that the rest of the media does when it's the Labour Party, sadly, often including the BBC. It was on a BBC podcast that Farage appeared this weekend. I want you to listen to something. This is the Political Thinking podcast that is on the BBC and that was broadcast this weekend. Presumably it was recorded before Nigel Farage announced his boycott of the BBC. I'm joking. He was never going to boycott the BBC. He just said that out loud because he knows that his admirers are credulous and foolish and expect him to talk utter gibberish. As long as he says enough racisms, they'll forgive him anything. But have a little listen to this, because this is really important about what's going to happen when, as is possible, migration in this country becomes a net minus, as in there are more people leaving than arriving, or immigration itself reaches such a low figure that it ceases to be politically salient. How will somebody who's only real policy, for want of a better word, whose only act, whose entire shtick is hating immigrants, how on earth will they respond politically to a new reality where immigration is next to nothing? Here's an early clue.
Just look at the net migration numbers. Oh, isn't it good? Net migration's coming down. Do you know why? There's an exodus. There is now an exodus. Those that are of a situation and a financial position that they're fortunate enough to have the choice are now fleeing the country in numbers. Actually, even bigger numbers than we saw back in the late 1970s when the brain drain was at its height. So you can see that.
So that's a lie. That's a blatant lie. I mean, it's possible he's too stupid to know that he's lying, but if he doesn't, if he's bright enough to understand simple numbers, then he is actually lying. And you can hear, I think, some panic in his voice about what on earth am I going to do if migration really drops off a cliff, because I've got nothing else. All I do is scare people about immigration. The real reason that net migration in the figures he's referring to fell by 445,000 in the year to June 2025 is because immigration itself fell by 401,000. So you're looking at 445,000 as a drop of which 401,000 is accounted for by fewer people coming here from overseas. Farage there lying and claiming that it is actually accounted for by the number of people leaving here to go overseas, of which there were 44,000. So out of 445,000, 401,000 was fewer people coming here from overseas. 44,000 was people going in the opposite direction. And of those 44,000, two-thirds were foreign nationals, doing what Nigel Farage has spent his entire career telling them to do and going back to where they came from. So an extraordinary lie for the BBC to broadcast, and utterly forgivable if the interviewer had then picked up on it and pointed out that it was a blatant lie, a complete misrepresentation of the figures. And if you're going to be interviewing a racist liar, then the least you can do is swat up on the lies that he's most likely to tell. And the BBC did nothing. Nick Robinson, presenting that podcast, failed utterly to either know or at least to point out that Farage is lying through his teeth. And it's really interesting because it gives you an early indication of what he's likely to do if, as most forecasts predict, immigration is set to plummet to almost negligible figures. So he'll focus on the small boats, 30, 40,000 people a year. Again, negligible in the great scheme of things, and massive majority of whom have their asylum applications processed. So he'll focus on them, and he'll probably, unless people like me are paid attention to, he'll start lying more and more and more about the reasons for net migration to fall being somehow the tiny number of people leaving the country as opposed to the massive drop in the number of people that are coming here. I'll leave you to decide whether he's thick or lying. It's one, ignorant or lying. And it shouldn't really be either or, should it? It's perfectly possible to be both. But there you go. That's the BBC, the horribly lefty biased BBC, failing utterly to do the most basic journalism. And I'm doing that story myself because I don't want Henry Reilly to compromise any future relationships or job opportunities that he might have. I don't think I'm going to be returning to the BBC anytime soon, so I am perfectly free to say that's an absolute disgrace. And that's how Farage triumphs, when people don't recognise what he is or the nonsense that he talks. And on it goes. Back to, if I were to give up this job, what would I do with my hands? I don't know, but Robin in Murfield. Well, it depends on the weather, actually, Robin. What made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James. Massive fan here.
Thank you.
My pleasure. I previously worked in admin at a law firm, and worked in another law firm before that for about 7 years or so. And I always struggled with my mental health. It was a mixture of anxiety and depression and things. And I thought that was just me.
Yes.
It turned out that I wasn't suited to the role. And as much as I tried to convince myself that I was and I could do it, I just couldn't do it to the same speed and sort of therefore match the efficiency with the speed for the job in comparison to others.
Right. Okay.
And safe to say, I lost my my job about a year and a bit ago. And when I was on sort of leave for my mental health, I was walking the dog and I saw a man doing some dry stone walling. And I looked at that and I thought, that looks really satisfying. And I went and chatted to him, and he gave me a few pointers and tips. And I then went and did a course with the Drystone Walling Association.
Wow.
And then went back to him and actually did some work with him. And he taught me loads, as did another waller in the area. And I became self-employed and set up myself as a gardener, much like Robert in Liverpool, as a sort of maintainer and sort of tidying up and things, and also as a dry stone waller.
How many days, in an average week, how much of it is spent dry stone walling?
It kind of depends, really. Because
seasonal?
No, usually it's all year round.
Is it?
That's one of the things I thought would help balance up with the gardening, which tends to be more seasonal.
Hard work, though, isn't it?
It is.
How old are you?
I have, I am 33.
Okay. So, I mean, I'm now of an age where I am sore, and I present a radio program. So I wake up sore most mornings. This is why I want to buy an infrared sauna. So you're all right for now. But if you keep supple and you keep doing your stretches and things like that, then the physical labour is not massively arduous, is it?
Oh no, it's arduous. I've got some injuries already. I mean, I'm waiting for surgery on my knee from an injury I sustained a year and a bit ago. As much as it slows me down and things, and I'm a big person anyway, so I'm kind of slowed down by that anyway. But I'm so much happier. I mean, when I was in my last job, the reason why I lost it was, well, I attempted suicide, really. And oh, yeah, I mean, thankfully it was a crap attempt, and hence I'm still here. And I'm very glad of it, because yes. I'm so much happier with the work I do.
I don't want to gloss over what you've just said, and clearly... I do worry about it. And what I'm interested in is... I mean, I'll remind people of the Samaritan's number, 116123, if they're going through anything similar. But I have, a weird fascination with dry stone walling.
Mm.
And one of the things I've always... How often do you get it wrong? Do you get the stone and try it and then decide it doesn't fit? Do you see what I mean?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I'm nowhere near the level of the expertise and the experience that the people who taught me. But you can only get there by doing it and giving it a go. And sometimes you'll get it wrong. So you take it out and try and find a place to go in the wall and, you know... If you're lucky, you get it there first time and you feel, oh, brilliant, I've got that done, fantastic. And then you'll come around to another bit on the next bit of wall and you think, oh, damn.
Yeah, and
sometimes you trim it and things and, you know, you dress it to make it fit. But generally you try and keep it the shape it was because you sort of recycle the stone. And if you got the same piece of wall and took it down and built it up again, you'd build it up completely differently to the first time that you did it.
I can hear in your voice that you love this.
Oh, I do.
I bet you didn't talk like this when you didn't talk like this when you were working in an office, did you?
No, I didn't.
And how much? Final question, because I really am indulging my inner anorak. How much of your work is repairing, and how much of your work is building walls from scratch? I used to see people like you at the Royal Show. In Staffordshire, and also at some of the shows in Yorkshire that I used to go to when a friend of mine... Here's a phrase I've never said on the radio before, Robin. A friend of mine was showing ferrets.
How
normal. There'd always be a dry stone waller somewhere in the showground. But how much is repairing and how much is building from scratch?
Yeah, recently it's mainly been repair work, both from a combination of the weather, be it hot or and people sort of enjoying the roads, driving out and skidding around a corner and smacking into one, or kind of the same when it's icy, really. But also the weather does bring in down, and just, you know, ones which if cattle and things have pushed them over and things, depending on if it's in a field or something. So it's mainly been repair work, but you know, I have built from scratch before and things, and
I love it, and everyone can hear in your voice the enthusiasm for the job that you're doing now as opposed to the one that you had before. Thank you. No, I mean, it's not been very AI heavy yet, this, but it's more actually been about people running out of patience or their relationship with the workplace becoming deeply strained and therefore moving on to do something else. It does make you wonder, though, doesn't it, about the human condition and whether or not we are kind of kidding ourselves by working in strange office-based environments when, as a species, we probably should... Well, no, because that's never going to work either. Thank you, Robin. It is 12:45.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
If Peter Mandelson's sharing of government documents with Epstein is worthy of police investigation, isn't Andrew Windsor's? Is the online safety plan all talk and no trousers? And please employ the young.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
This year at Amazon, we're increasing the electric vehicles used for deliveries across Europe to over 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of. Aww.
where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden.
Can they have their ball back, please?
We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on projected delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU by end of 2026.
Thanks for a lovely evening. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
Yeah, okay. That'd be lovely.
Oh, gosh, sorry. I didn't mean... I just wanted you to see my new Wix kitchen. It's just been installed.
At Wix, our experts will support you every step of the way, from a free kitchen design service through to a professional installation. Plus, right now, find big savings in the Wix kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms apply.
I'm going to tell you exactly what you need to do. Dominate your finances.
Sunday morning, listening to questionable financial advice from the FinTok bros on his social feed.
Drowning in green. Scale, 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 scale.
This is the moment Isaac chose to search Barclays Life Skills, get some better money intel, and save up for that new skateboard. We're helping young people become money confident. Search Barclays Life Skills. Barclays. Make money work for you.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen? It's not working. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of. But he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine, and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
It's 12:48. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where the conversation continues. It was supposed to be about AI, but it isn't really. Thank goodness no one's paying enough attention to have noticed. It's more about the difference between white collar and blue collar, and I'm loving it. I really am, particularly dry stone walling. Can you do that as an amateur? Can I build a dry stone wall in my own garden? Problem is, I don't need a wall in my garden. But there's something about dry stone walling that's always, and it wasn't in Staffordshire, forgive me, Stoneleigh in Warwickshire is where the Royal Show is held every year. But that's what we're talking about, the difference between doing office work and doing what I think I might actually start describing as real work. Simon's in Bristol. Simon, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Hello, thanks for taking my call.
You're
big
very
fan.
Welcome. Thank you.
First time caller.
All of that. He's done the full set there. Thank you.
unfortunately, the Royal Show was stopped about 12, 15 years ago.
Nobody tells me anything. That's one of my fondest childhood memories. It was a school trip, Simon. We used to go on a school trip, and it was not only were you out of school for the day, but also, I mean, you could do all these fascinating things, but there we go. I went to one in Norfolk. I went to the Norfolk Show. Don't tell me that's gone as well. I only went to that about 5 years ago.
There's still lots of really good shows, and we'd ask everyone to support them because it's a great showcase for agriculture and industry.
Shows. We're talking about country shows, aren't we? Really?
We are talking about country shows.
Yes. So
Barton West, down near where I am, the Royal Welsh in Buff Wells, the Highland Show, Balmoral Show. And so I used to work for a UK company that was the leading manufacturer of shearing equipment and clipping equipment, so for sheep
you'd get someone doing some shearing at the competition, a national competition.
Thing absolutely fantastic. I worked for them for 15 years, started as export manager, ended up as the global head of sales.
Big job
traveling around the world, very 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 privileged, very fortunate, saw some amazing things, went to some amazing places, and so on and so forth. I then worked for a competitor of theirs, a Swiss, absolutely fantastic products. But The commercial world and all those sorts of things, you could see, and the thing with sales, by the way, the reason why everybody's mentioned sales is not AI threatened, because the human-to-human interaction is really, really important.
Yeah.
But it wasn't AI necessarily that got me, but just the toxicity of the kind of modern world and all those sorts of things. But I hadn't worked hard enough to retire, James.
Sure.
Well,
you had. You were a bit young, probably. I mean,
I'm the same age as you.
Well, then you were definitely too young.
Same as you. And I went to Downside where you went to Ampleforth. So I'm an old Gregorian. So I think you know one of my friends, good friends, brothers and things like that.
It's seven a small world, except it isn't really, is it? That's the point.
No,
but we don't have many mutuals from the world of shearing.
No, you definitely won't. You definitely won't. But I'm a mobile sharpener. So I have get my hands dirty, do wonderful things. At the moment, I'm just sharpening some dog grooming blades and scissors. I've just come from an equestrian yard, so working with horse people. But everybody's a potential customer. Looking through your kitchen, you've got knives, scissors. Even if you just live in the top floor of a tower block, you've got a window box with a pair of secateurs. I can sharpen those. And that's what I do. There's all sorts of that. I don't want to give you the full sales stuff, but
my
strap line is repair, resharp and revise. It's, you know...
Because you've got a nice kit to start with. Because, I mean, we dispose and buy, don't we? As we've been conditioned to. But what you want to do is buy... Vimes's boots, isn't it, from Terry Pratchett. You want to buy the best you can afford and then look after it properly rather than replace it.
100%. 100%. Buy the best you can, and it will last and look after you. I can make even cheap things sharp, but the thing is, they won't stay sharp.
They won't stay sharp. No, of course not. What's the biggest thing you do? Is it? I mean, in terms of farm equipment, what's the biggest thing you sharpen? I'm coming out with some questions today, aren't I? Talking to a dry stone waller and a blade sharpener, but these, I don't know, they appeal to something quite primitive inside me. What's the biggest thing you sharpen?
So, just to challenge your question there, is it in terms of size or volume? The most important thing to my business are dog groomers. So, you've got a labradoodle or something, haven't you? You've got a doodle.
Cavapoo.
So, you take them to the dog groomer. The dog groomers are absolutely essential to what I do. And again, also AI-proof.
That's true.
With the rise of doodles over the last 6 to 10 years, that's what the core of my business. So,
Is it really? Good Lord.
Big shout out to dog groomers doing a really good job.
I love this. And are you happier now than you were then?
Yeah. So I used to be out of the country for about 10 days, 2 weeks of the month. And the toll, listening to some of the previous callers, we've all got something, like, you know, suicidal ideation. I had some really, really rough times. Puts a huge amount of strain on personal relationships. I have a teenage daughter, and
you see her now.
Again. There's a point at which children, require their father. And if you ask my daughter, she'd say that I was never there as a child, and that's not true. But
that's how it felt. That's how it felt to her.
As a teenager, it's really, really important. I've been here, and she's got an ADHD diagnosis. She won't mind me bleating that over national radio because, unfortunately, she's not an LBC listener.
What?
But,
Where did it all go wrong?
She is a socialist, she was telling me last night. But we do play your board game.
This is lovely.
Thanks very much for what you do.
You take care. I'll carry on as long as you do. In many ways, I was going to say that we're in the same business, but my callers are my blade sharpeners. So you were sharpening two blades there, the ones that you get paid for doing, and then keeping my blade sharp as well, which is what happens here on a daily basis. Speaking of being present as a parent, one of my periodical recommendations, you've probably already seen it, but George Clooney's latest movie, J. Kelly, is an absolute peach of a film. It is a glorious piece of cinema. It really is. And I cannot recommend it highly enough. I believe it has dropped on Netflix. I watched it this weekend with one of my daughters, actually. And I read about it afterwards. I don't do this very often, but sometimes if a film really gets me, I like to read an interview with the director afterwards, find out a little bit more about it. And it talks exactly about what Simon just talked about being present as a parent, and that moment that comes to us all when you realise that your child, even if you have been really present, that your child would rather be off doing their own thing than be with you. And it's a fascinating thing for a parent to go through. And sometimes you need to see it represented in art to process your own feelings about the phenomenon. Anyway, there you go. That's your Monday recommendation. We try and do a recommendation every day this week of something to read or watch or listen to. Yeah, why not? Will anyone remember that? No? Denis is in Chiswick. Denis, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I'm not sure if it counts as a blue-collar job, but I gave up my job. Well, I was made redundant from the city just over a year ago, and I'm now a full-time Lego artist.
As in, you make things out of Lego for people, or you work for Lego?
No, I don't work for Lego, unfortunately. That is a childhood dream that I didn't manage to achieve.
When I used to read my emails a very long time ago... And a lovely bloke called Guy used to email me quite often. And I just remember his job description. And it said, Chief Model Maker, Legoland. And I thought...
That's the dream.
That is just the job of... I mean, I'm not very good at it, so I wouldn't be any use at all. But that must be such a magnificent thing to do. And you've carved your own niche now. You actually do commissions, Lego commissions.
I do. So I take commissions.
How fantastic.
I do lots of kind of cult comedy sets and all manner of strange things. I had a bundle of commissions coming up to Christmas, and I got asked to make the maddest things.
That's magic. How did you come up with the idea?
Well, I mean, I was always a massive Lego obsessive.
Sure. Well, I didn't think you'd taken it up. And then, I mean, obviously you had an enthusiasm for Lego, but where did you get the idea? Because my Matthew, who looks after my YouTube channel, he'd probably be... Well, I want him to carry on looking after my YouTube channel, so let's not talk about this anymore.
Well, I heard you say on Friday that Keith had started to build his flat out of Lego.
Yeah, he has. We're all Lego crazy on this programme. It's ridiculous, really. So where did you... I mean, did you know there was a market for this, or did you dip your toe into it and then discover the market, or...?
Well, I'd started kind of making custom builds as presents for people.
Oh, yeah.
And then the combination of being made redundant, and I had a bereavement, and just also I was diagnosed as autistic a few years ago, which kind of, considering I was a little girl obsessed with Lego, wasn't a huge surprise.
May have been a clue. Would you like a free advert for your business or not? You don't have to.
Just... Oh, no, I would love that. Thank you.
Okay.
I am the Brickuationist.
The brick what?
Brickuationist, situationist.
Oh, clever.
Which is
brick as in CK, and then uationist. Are you all right there, Sheila? Is everything all right? Sorry about that. Sheila just sneezed, didn't he? The Brickuationist.
That's right, yeah. It's a bit pretentious, but I thought
it's not pretentious at all, because it means that someone Googles that now, they'll find you.
Oh, wow. Gosh,
won't
that's
they?
Scary.
Well, that's what an advert's are for.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
No, you're very
welcome.
There might be
a little Lego James LBC.
Well, no, please. Hopefully you'll be far too busy with all the commissions that I've just sent your way. Do you have any advice for Keith in the meantime as he continues to construct his own flat in Lego?
Structural integrity.
Structural integrity,
Keith.
It's
all about the structural integrity.
It's all about the structural integrity. A bit like this programme. Thank you, Denny. Thank you. That was a nice hour, wasn't it? I didn't quite see that one coming. I thought it was all going to be about, woe is me, AI is coming for my job. And instead we've ended up with blade sharpeners, dry stone wall builders and Lego model makers. What a waste of a life I've lived. Eh?
I loved it. I loved that hour, by
Thank
the way.
Thank you. Yeah. What was wrong with the other two?
Oh, didn't hear it. Well, I heard the first 20 minutes of the first one.
What have we done with our lives,
What
Sheik?
Would you do? Did you decide what you would do instead?
I'd quite like to be a dry stone waller, but I'm not very good at this kind of thing. That's the problem.
You get good.
Maybe. If you missed any of today's show, and if you're wondering what on earth has happened, you can listen back on our free Global Player or on the LBC app. Podcasts are there, including mine, and you can download it for free from your app store now. Tom Sorbitt will be with you at 4. What would you have done?
Garden design.
Would you? Design,
yeah.
Design.
Outdoors.
I mean, yeah, you'd be doing the labour as well.
Planting, labour, designing, talking to people about what they want, why they want it, advising them.
Nice.
Getting their hands dirty.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
Well, you still might. Go into business together.
Could.
Be like one of those Irish construction firms. There's one near me, O'Halloran and O'Brien.
O'Brien.
It'd be Fogarty and O'Brien. No job too small.
Exactly. Oh, dear.
On we go.
That's a good idea.
I know.
Let's do it. You can wear your Aaron jumper. in the publicity shops. At three today, speaking of jobs, employing the young is government policy, especially minimum wage, pricing them out of work. Someone from the Bank of England thinks so. We'll talk about that at three. At two, tough talk from the Prime Minister on keeping young people, children, safe online. But are we making good choices? Molly Russell's father, Ian, joins me. At two, Molly took her own life after viewing suicidal content. We'll have an update on the Savannah Guthrie case, or her mother, Nancy Guthrie, missing now for 2 weeks. But I start with Peter Mandelson and Andrew Windsor. If Mandelson's passing on of information is serious enough for a police investigation, isn't Andrew's?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, ministers are thinking about limiting children's interactions with AI chatbots. It's in addition to a potential ban on social media for under-16s. Sir Keir Starmer says he'll act quickly if the law needs updating. The intervention's being welcomed by Hannah Swersky from the Internet Watch Foundation.
We want to see AI regulated in the same way as social media, and we want them to particularly implement a ban on nudify apps, and we also want to see more regulation of AI more broadly.
The Kremlin has rejected as biased accusations that it was responsible for the death of the jailed Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny. The UK and four other European nations say they have evidence Russia killed Mr. Navalny using a toxin from poisoned dart frogs in 2024. The Prime Minister says the UK must go faster to increase defence spending. Sir Keir Starmer promised last year to spend 3% of national income in the next Parliament, but it's reported he wants to hit that level before the next election. The PM says Russia's the main threat.
In a few days' time, it's the four-year anniversary of the start of the conflict in Ukraine. We want a just and lasting peace, but that will not extinguish the Russian threat. And we need to be alert to that, because that's going to affect every single person in this country.
The Tories say his plans are a pipe dream. People in North London are being warned about an outbreak of measles. More than 60 cases have been seen in schools across Enfield, which has one of the lowest vaccine uptake rates in the country. Dudu Sher Arami is the borough's Director of Public Health.
This is a very significant risk to anybody who is unvaccinated. There is potential for measles to spread further. It's a very contagious infection. I think what makes it a little bit more difficult to identify sometimes is the initial phase can be very much like a cough.
Day 10 of the Winter Olympics is underway, with Team GB targeting more medals after yesterday's two golds. One was won by Matt Weston and Tabby Stoker in the mixed team skeleton event. She's told LBC News the win is still sinking in.
It was a dream come true. And especially to have all my friends and family there, everyone who supported us along this journey, and to see them all in the crowd and see how much it meant to me, but also to all of them too. Yeah, for me, it was amazing.
In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 323 points at 10,469. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather. Scattered showers with a risk of hail and thunder and sunny spells for most. Wintry showers on higher ground. Highs of 2 to 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Matt Hewitt.
Tesco Finest Alderwood Smoked Bacon. The foundation for the ultimate bacon butty. It's why only the finest bacon is traditionally hand-cured with Cornish sea salt. Delicately smoked over Alderwood and matured for at least 19 days. Layer it between slices of crusty bread and savour its richer flavour. All you have to think about is brown sauce or red. Make your everyday taste better with Tesco Finest. Majority of larger stores.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there. Good afternoon to you. Voices are growing with calls to have Prince Andrew, as he was, investigated by the police over clear exchanges of files with Jeffrey Epstein, some of which contain confidential government information. This was in his time as a trade envoy. Now, over the weekend, Stephen Parkinson, the Director of Public Prosecutions for England and Wales, said it is his own job, to enforce the law, and I do so without fear or favour. That is unaffected by the status of the individual concerned. The head of the Crown Prosecution saying no one is above the law. And we know that Peter Mandelson's handing over of files as well, and the allegations of the circumstances around it are also being investigated by Thames Valley Police. Now, I don't know about you, but it seems to me that this is so obviously worthy of an investigation. Andrew Mountbatten Windsor's handing over of files to Jeffrey Epstein. And I'd be interested to know whether you think, In a sense, it's potentially anyway, obviously an investigation would have to happen. But in a sense, it's the same as Peter Mandelson's exchanges of files. But it feels worse to me because it's a member of the royal family. And the reason it feels worse to me and more serious, I mean, the law would treat it in the same way in terms of investigation. But the reason it feels more egregious to me, if indeed this was the intention of the then Prince Andrew, is that we are sold the idea and the fact of the royal family on the basis of breeding, literal and metaphoric breeding. They're breeding. No son of the former queen, the late queen, I should say, Queen Elizabeth, could even consider doing this. And yet, allegedly, he has. It's the exchanges. I mean, what the intention was behind the exchanges, I think, matters enormously. But they're there to see in those Epstein files. So, what do you think should happen? We've had Vince Cable, former coalition government minister, senior figure, hardly a rabble rouser, saying it's time that these actions by the then Prince Andrew were investigated by police as well. I can't think of an argument against it. Do we need to go further and call for a release on all of the Andrew files as well as a police investigation? 0345 6060 973, the number to call. You can text 84850. Lord Fowkes of Cumnock, George Fowkes, as you might remember him, Labour peer who served as Parliamentary Under-Secretary of State for International Development, a Minister of State for Scotland as well, up to 2002, joins me now. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sheila.
How serious is this?
I think it's very serious, and I strongly support Vince Cable's call for a police investigation. It seems there may well have been misconduct in public office when confidential information about Aston Martin, about RBS, was passed to Jeffrey Epstein, and that calls for a police investigation. But I also agree with what you implied earlier on, that there should be a wider investigation. What worries me is that a lot of the files regarding his work as a trade envoy seem to have disappeared. I've been asking questions about briefings that he may have had, about his meetings, about his travel, all the engagements, and they seem to have gone possibly to the National Records Office for some reason. So I want the Foreign Office, Foreign Commonwealth and Development Office, to carry out an urgent investigation and to get all these files together on the record and to publish a report about all his activities as a trade envoy.